This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
The choice catch of blushing blossom stands ripe for the picking. Time to make my move. Pardon me, Miss Charlotte.
Why, if it isn't the odious Carlton Creepstone, vile overseer of the hired hands.
It's a pleasure to see you, Miss Charlotte.
The pleasure's not mine, Mr. Creepstone. My, but I'm glad gloves were invented.
Now, what could that sniveling snake want with Miss Charlotte? I shall move closer to find out.
Miss Charlotte, I don't know if this is the time or the place.
How true.
But I shall speak what's on my mind. I have long admired you from afar.
An excellent place.
But lately, my interest has blossomed into affection. And now I'm afraid my affection has blossomed into a deeper, more substantial emotion. Dare I say it? Could it be love?
Probably just a bit of indigestion.
I don't sleep nights.
Count sheep, it works for me.
You can't pull the wool over my eyes. I've seen you looking at me.
I have never voluntarily looked at you in my life.
You idiot, do you mind?
Sorry.
Now, where was I?
Leaving.
Nice try. As I was saying, I have fallen for you, Miss Charlotte. And fearing the worst is about to happen to our country, I now ask your hand in marriage.
That's about the worst thing that could happen to our country.
Miss Charlotte, I make no joke.
But Mr. Creepstone, I love you not. In fact, I don't even like you. Marriage to you would be like a never-ending nightmare, a symphony without notes, a painting without color, a dance without music.
All right, I get the metaphor.
Then please leave the barbecue at once.
You don't get rid of Carlton Creepstone that easily.
Really, Mr. Creepstone, I want you to go.
One day you'll marry me, Charlotte, and then all of Magnolia will be mine. What do you say to that, my sweet?
I think you're all wet, Mr. Creepstone.
Why, you...
Sorry, looks like you've had a nasty accident. You'd better go home and change.
I'll get you for that. I'll get both of you. Just you wait and see.
Oh, Ma, we've got to get rid of that horrible Carlton Creepstone. He just said the vilest things to me.
I never like him. Charlotte, perhaps you're right.
I heard the most wretched things about him from my cousin twice removed, who lives in Mobile. Why, down there he once worked as a hired hand himself.
But I don't understand, Charles.
I love another, Ellen.
You said you love me.
A slip of the tongue.
Well, of all the rude, horrible things, I have already ordered my wedding dress, reserved the church, made the mitts.
Please, my dear, don't make this any more painful than it is.
You want pain? I'll give you pain.
Wahoo! Wahoo! Everybody, hear the news. The Yankees have fired on Fort Sumter. We are at war.
Oh, Miss Charlotte, ain't it exciting? War. Our first war.
Fiddle-dee-dee. What a way to run a perfectly good barbecue.
Don't you understand what this means? We'll all be going off to fight in the war.
You will?
Well, every eligible man under the age of 80.
Oh, dear. I hadn't thought of that. There won't be a man for miles and miles around.
So, Miss Charlotte, there's something I'd like to ask you.
What's that, Mr. Wishy Man?
I'm so sorry. I need to break in and we need to do an ID because we're at the top of the hour.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to come back and finish this up. You're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, right here on good old KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and always on the World Wide Web at www.kpft.org.
This is General Manager Dwayne Bradley to let you know that effective Wednesday, July 22nd, KPFT Houston rolls out its new weekday program schedule. This is the biggest schedule change in nearly a decade, and in short, your favorite news and talk programs are moving to morning and afternoon drive times, while music gets you through the workday. Big changes include BBC NewsHour shifting to 7 a.m., Democracy Now! At 8, Open Journal moves to 9 a.m., and a new morning music block hosted by Rourke Smith will be on on from 10 to noon Monday through Friday. From noon to 1, we bring you the return of the World Cafe. Much-loved shows like New Capital, Connect the Dots, Earth 101, and Partisan Gridlock will anchor our afternoon drive times at 3 p.m. Democracy Now!'s rebroadcast moves to 5, while This American Life, Uprising, Explorations, and Alternative Radio move to 6 p.m. Visit KPFT.org for the complete program schedule. Tune in July 22nd for the new KPFT Houston.
Picture Show presents Not So Final Frontier, a night of sci-fi and Star Trek fan films on Saturday, July 25th at Diverse Works Art Space. The evening of sci-fi short films will include everything from animation to talking action figures and a modern-day fan-produced pilot from the Austin group Starship Exeter, who will be in attendance. For information on community activities, visit KPFT's events calendar at kpft.org. KPFT Houston.
And we're back. Now, where did we leave off?
Oh, they'll find it.
Maybe we can repeat a couple of the lines prior.
Back up a little bit?
Yeah. He's going to repeat his.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, Miss Charlotte, there's something I'd like to ask you.
What's that, Mr. Wishy Man?
Well, I've long admired you from afar. But lately, my interest has blossomed into affection, and now I'm afraid my affection has blossomed into a deeper, more substantial emotion. There I say, can it be...
Do you share a rider with someone?
Miss Charlotte, you make me the happiest soldier on earth if you take my hand in marriage.
Me and you?
Please, Miss Charlotte, I'm a boy going off to face the terrors of war. Send me off happy.
Okay. Switch over to page 20.
That's the sound of paper rustling. They brought their scraps. What was
I? Where on 20?
Or actually 19.
Yeah.
It'll be dreadful. The Yankees are getting closer and closer.
I'm leaving for Atlanta as soon as I can get a train ticket.
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but the train's no longer running, and every bridge between here and Atlanta has been blown up.
No! Then I'll simply have to resort to this.
Gracious, that's a gun, a real gun.
Grandpappy Amos's pistol, which once shot at the pirate Blackbeard. Any Yankee gets within 10 miles of me, and I'll let him have it.
I think I'm going to faint.
Don't be ridiculous. You fall, and you'll crack the sidewalk. Besides, you were just about to tell me news about Charlotte O'Meara Wishyman.
Well, sad to relate, but her dear husband, Charles, has been lost in the glorious service of the Confederacy.
A pity. How did he die?
No, dear, you don't understand. He hasn't died. He's been lost. Literally. Nobody can find him.
Poor dear Charlotte, not knowing her husband's fate.
Well, Miss Hart, not a very glorious day for any of us, I'm afraid.
We take it you've heard of the fate of Charles Wishyman.
I have. They said he was lost at the third battle of Chattahoochee.
He probably bolted to return to his dear Charlotte.
Oh, he must have truly loved her.
That's a lie. He loved me, and I'll make her pay for everything that's happened. Somehow, I'll make her pay.
She was such a sweet girl. I fear what she'll do to Charlotte if given the chance.
Ah, Mr. Butler, how are things at Magnolia?
The last cow's been sold. We couldn't plant the crops this spring because we couldn't afford the seeds. Our wells almost dried up, the barns almost fell down. Dry rot set in on the main house, and we're down to our last bottle of Dom Perignon. Eh? Otherwise, everything's just coming up roses.
We've read news of your former overseer.
That wretch Carlton Creepstone? I haven't thought of him since that barbecue 4 years ago. What news have you heard?
He's Colonel Carlton Creepstone.
No southern unit would ever afford him that honor.
Oh, you're right. He's fighting for the Union Army, and his troops are heading this way. I'm afraid the cause is lost.
We'll fight till the death.
Easy enough for you to say standing here.
But, Miss Chataway, you know my archers fell unexpectedly, and try as I could, no regiment would have me.
Well, Mr. Butler, we're sure you've done what you can to hold Magnolia together, but the cause needs everyone at the front lines. Remember, flat feet marching are better than no feet marching.
Lauda here. Lauda de Passion.
Howdy do, Miss de Passion.
I do just fine, big boy. How's about yourself?
I'm hot.
You're strange in these parts, aren't you?
How could you tell, Dollface?
Dollface? Why, heavens, the insolence.
What do you want in Blushing Blossom?
I'm thinking of starting a little business, honey.
Honey, why, I never.
I'll bet not.
What kind of business?
The kind of place where you can sit down, put your feet up, and wet your whistle, if you know what I mean.
You mean a saloon?
There are gonna be a lot of dry whistles when this war's over. So tell me, anybody got an idea where I can get a room?
The hotel's closed.
Too bad. I got just a bit of cash.
Oh, my. I bet you for a nominal fee you can get a room over at Magnolia.
Really, Mr. Butler?
So where's this Magnolia place, big boy?
Just follow Main Street out 2 miles. It'll be the first mansion on your right.
Why don't you escort me there, handsome?
Oh, gosh. I'd just love to, Mr. Passion, but a man's got to do what a man's got to do. Just do me one favor, Mr. Passion. Just tell Charlotte I... Tell her I...
Yeah, big boy.
Oh, shucks. Just tell her goodbye.
So, Mr. Passion, where are you from?
Why, I hail from Chattanooga, and I got here on the choo-choo. Ta-ta.
That's a lot of boom-boom woman.
And something tells me a lot of boom-boom trouble.
Okay, keep going. Next thing.
Oh. Well, oh, Prickly, how could this have happened?
Them Yankees never pick up after themselves. Coming in here having their wild parties? Well, I never seen the like. And look here, eating bread topped with tomato sauce just goes to show you how uncivilized they are.
I'm not talking about the mess. I'm talking about the war, Prickly. How could we have lost?
Well, ma'am, you win some, you lose some. That's what my ma used to say.
But what do we do now? How will we live?
We'll just go back to Platinum Common like in the old days.
Yes, of course. What a wonderful idea. Now that the war's about to end, everybody'll need new shirts and dresses. Everybody's tired of that tacky old blue and gray. They're going to want bright colors, stripes, polka dots. We'll plant all 8,000 acres with cotton. We'll supply those northern mills, and we'll forge a new partnership based on money and greed. Will, Charles, Robert, come right in right away. We've got work to do. Will, Charles, Robert?
I don't think they're coming, Miss Charlotte.
They have to come when I call. Servants always come when I call.
But they're gone, Miss Charlotte.
I didn't tell them they could go.
Honey, they up and left in 1864.
Fiddle-dee-ding. Those ungrateful nincompoops. At least Brett's still around. Brett.
He's gone, too.
No. You're lying to me. Why are you lying to me, Prickly?
I ain't lying to you. Mr. Brett up and joined the Confederate forces just yesterday.
Well, of all the selfish things to do, what if he gets lost just like Charles did?
Oh, come on. You ain't exactly been mourning over the loss of your dear hubby, Miss Charles.
Well, we weren't together much more than 4 hours before he up and left. I mean, how attached could I get to him?
And you weren't attached to Mr. Brett at all.
Now, that's not true. I was always fond of Mr. Butler.
You sure had funny ways of showing it.
Well, enough of this, Prickly. You're just my maid, and you're not supposed to be discussing my private affairs in my presence anyhow. And I guess since Mr. Brett's gone, Well, there's only one person left to plant the 8,000 acres of cotton.
Oh, no. Not a snowball's chance in Louisiana. I do floors, ceilings, bed linen, but I don't do cotton.
Please, Prickly. You certainly don't think I can plant and harvest all that cotton.
Look, Miss Charlotte, I got lumbago, rheumatism, and the gout. I got a sister in Mobile who want me to come live with her.
But if we don't get the cotton in, why, we'll be forced to give up Magnolia.
If you ask me, it's a bit more house than you need, Miss Charlotte.
Okay. Go over to 34.
Well, my dumb little friend, it appears Magnolia will soon be ours.
Dumb? Little?
If the shoe fits, Dingbat, wear it.
You're a wicked soul, boss.
I know. That's why I love myself so. And as soon as Magnolia is mine, well then, I shall have to save that poor, innocent widow, Charlotte O'Mara, from the grips of poverty by marrying her.
Marry her? Gee, boss. I didn't think you were the type to walk down the aisle.
You don't think I have a heart? You think I'm not capable of love?
In a nutshell.
Why, of all the cruel and vicious lies, I'm nothing but a tender-hearted old pushover who likes a pretty face. Especially one with a fortune. Let's face it, she may pull something smart, like find out I'm not really entitled to Magnolia. But if I'm her husband, well then, we split it all 50-50.
Unless something happens to her.
Brilliant! I'm glad I thought of it. Something will happen to her. I'm sure there's a well on the property into which she can fall and never be found again. Then, Magnolia will be mine.
Why, look, Ashley, it's that terrible misguided Mr. Creepstone. I wonder what he's doing back in Blushing Blossom.
I fear he's up to no good, dear sweet Melody.
Oh, Ashley, I can't imagine what he would be up to now that the war is ending.
Nevertheless, he is a wretch, a fiend, a blackguard.
Nonsense. What he needs is a good home-cooked meal and someone to care about him. Yoo-hoo, Mr. Creepstone.
Egad, it's that goody-two-shoes Melody Bilks. Why, Mrs. Bilks, it's indeed a pleasure seeing you again.
It's been a long time. Not since the barbecue at Magnolia the day the war broke out. You remember my husband, don't you?
Of course, Mr. Bilks.
I'll not shake hands with a cad like you, Creepstone.
You want me to do something drastic to him, boss?
May I present my assistant, Sherman Slitherside, late of Savannah.
We're very pleased to meet you, Mr. Slitherside. And I must apologize for my husband. During the war, he was hit with a bomb and three-quarters of his skull was replaced with wood.
Egad! Goes against my grain.
Left him pretty bored.
Well, I'm not impaired at all, and I can smell fiends as sharply as ever.
Really, Mr. Bilks? We have done nothing to deserve this.
Precisely. And to make amends for Ashley's terrible behavior, I'm inviting you both to stay at Two Oaks while you're in Blushing Blossom.
Why, thank you, Mrs. Bilks.
Melody, you do not know what you're doing.
We must answer Charlotte's urgent plea.
Urgent plea? Sounds important.
The poor dear will be destitute if we don't help her find cotton seeds for her new crop.
Oh, what a terrible shame.
But fear not. Ashley and I have more than she needs since our business has been so successful of late.
And, what kind of business are you in?
Lumber. What else?
Extra, extra. Read all about it.
What's happened, young man?
I don't know. I can't read.
Here's a penny, my boy.
That's a nickel now, sir.
Why, that's highway robbery.
Then get the news someplace else.
All right, here. Great Scott!
Oh, dear. Something dreadful's happened in Scotland.
No, my dear. Something wonderful's happened here. The war has ended.
Our prayers are answered.
And now the fun begins.
Come along, Ashley. Now that the war is over, I'm sure we'll have more lumber orders than we can fill. It's time to rebuild all of Blushing Blossom.
Good day, Mr. and Mrs. Bilks.
Dinner's sharp at 7.
So, Charlotte's planting a crop. That means she must have come up with the money, hmm? Well, there must be something we can do about that.
Mr. Creepstone?
Egad, and who can this Plain Jane be?
You don't know me.
That's been my pleasure, I'm sure.
I understand you have an interest in what's been going on at Magnolia.
Indeed. You have a titillating trifle of testimony for me?
Something you would be most interested in.
Is that so?
Of course, a lady's got to make a living.
How much of a living?
Perhaps you'll join me for a cup of tea and we can work out the details.
Well, you sound like my kind of woman. Just tea?
We'll see.
Have you seen any Yankees, Mrs. Chataway?
Saw that conniving Colonel Creepstone just a few minutes ago, talking to the kind-hearted Melody and the dim-witted Ashley Bilks.
No.
Yes.
What do you suppose he's up to?
I heard he wants to steal Magnolia from the O'Maras.
No.
Yes.
Could Mrs. Bilks be a party to that?
If she ever found out how Charlotte O'Mara feels about her husband, she okay. may.
Okay. It's one little bitty last scene on page 62. Starting with Creepstone's line, look like the ace up your sleeve. So the Rev can read.
Ha ha! Looks like the ace up your sleeves, ladies, has put you behind the eight ball. And now, since we're all here and present, it would be a lovely time for a wedding, wouldn't you say?
Wedding?
You and me, my little ginger snap.
I wouldn't marry a crumb like you.
That way, Magnolia will be mine, regardless of what the Dixie Mortgage Company says.
Never. I'll never consent to be your bride.
Should I be a real cad? If you don't, I'll drill Ma and Pa with so many bullets they'll look like cribbage boards.
You're a real cad, Creepstone.
All right, Reverend, let's have the ceremony.
The most unusual place to perform a marriage, I'm afraid.
Nobody can say I'm boring, right, Reverend? Now get a wiggle on it or you'll be joining the choir real soon.
I'm already a member of our church choir.
I was thinking of something more in that direction.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to unite this happy couple in holy matrimony. If there be anyone present who has just cause that they should not wed, let him speak his peace.
See? Everybody thinks this is a match made in heaven, so get on with it.
No, wait. Didn't you hear that?
That was just my stomach grumbling.
Charlotte!
I now pronounce you.
Charlotte, it's me!
Brett! Oh, Brett Butler, help!
Man and wife.
Man and...
Hold on!
No, that's it.
You evil
You've
woman.
Gotta come and find out whether or woman. Not he arrives in time.
So, when's it running again, Doris?
It's through August the 29th, Friday and Saturdays at 8:30, Sunday matinees at 3 o'clock on August the 2nd, the 9th, the 16th, and the 23rd.
And they can make reservations by calling
713-682-3525. And we also have a website, www.theatersuburbia, as you always say,
.com.
That you can get more information.
Yeah.
And everybody stayed awake for the whole thing. They were all, should have seen them in the lobby, boy.
It's a fun show. And it's suitable from kids to grandparents. Mm-hmm. It's a family-type show, no bad language, no nothing.
No nothing.
It's just a fun way to have, good way to have fun.
Just a wooden head or two.
That's it, yeah. And a villain who gets his just reward.
Right.
Anyway. I don't tell anybody, but I really do love Glenn.
Glenn gets it every year.
And he deserves it.
He earns it.
He gets it in the end.
Yeah, he sure does.
don't give away the ending, Jimmy.
Well, they get to sing Goober Peas, what more could you ask for?
Oh, yeah. That's true.
What?
Yes.
Jimmy wants to know more about that, Marilyn.
More than Goober Peas?
That's a song?
Uh-huh.
Yes, dear, it's a song.
Goober Peas.
Actually, the lady that plays the piano for us, Alice, also created a song, special song for Glenn to sing.
The House of the Rising Magnolia.
So you need, and also one of the other songs she sort of created for the ladies to sing.
Oh, cool.
Would you like a little short version of Goober Peas?
Yeah.
Okay, guys, let's see if y'all remember the words.
Sitting by the roadside on a sunny
day. Down in Blushing Blossom, passing time away. Resting in the shadows underneath the trees. Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas. Peas, 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 eating goober peas. Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas. Resting in the evening on a starry night. On the great veranda, what a lovely sight. Sitting in the moonlight, basking in the breeze. Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas. Peas, 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 eating goober peas. Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas. Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas.
And now you know why they're actors, not singers.
Yeah. But that song was by the director.
And yeah. The audience gets to sing along with
it. That's right.
Self-defense.
So I can't wait for that one.
And as usual, Jimmy, we thank you and KPFT
you
for
betcha.
Having us.
You betcha. Thanks for being here.
What is the address real quick?
4106 Way Out West Drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fairly new location. We've been there just under a year.
Mm-hmm.
We moved last year after 47 years at the other location.
So if you remember where the old location is, just go there.
And West go 5 miles further down
and
43rd.
Go 43rd until it hits Semstead and turn around and take your first
And if you have any interest in the theater at all, be over there tomorrow afternoon at 2:00 for auditions. You
yeah.
don't have to be an actor. There are all kinds of things they can put you to work doing.
Plus, you're doing that...
the workshop?
Workshop thing.
That's right. Yeah.
Actually, Jimmy, there are several people in this show that have never really acted before.
In this show? No.
Really?
I don't know what to
show.
Say to that.
And they've done a darn good
yeah.
job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
cool.
That's how you learn.
That's how you learn.
One would assume you're giving us some music to get 20 people out of the room.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Thank you.
I got
it. And now a little piece of music. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
did me. He's got a tattoo of his dick on his belly. It was double vision disoriented. Denny's kind of a dorky fella. Denny's dramatic, Denny's dark. He ain't nothing like the restaurant. He has HIV positive tattooed in black and 6-inch letters on his back. Says I want them to see what they've done to me, Denny. Denny's reading the Decameron about a plague that came before. 'Cause Denny's dying and Denny don't like it, and Denny don't dance no more. He's kinda new age, but Denny's not too smart. Trying to love himself, but doesn't really know how. Got a heart tattoo with his own name in it. Trouble is Denny doesn't really get it. Self-esteem is just a dream for Denny. Denny could be very funny. Says he wanted my asshole tattooed on his chin. But Denny's very demanding. Stares at the video, feeling dejected, helplessly watching himself get infected. Denny's got pneumocystis and a new tattoo as well. Denny got a skull and crossbones smack in the middle of his forehead. Says I want them to see what they've done to me, Denny.
Moment mal. Ich bin ganz atemlos. Und
in my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
That was a good one. Are we already in there? No? No? Oh, wait.
We're close.
You're close?
Yes. Yes.
I didn't ask you about that.
And what did we hear?
What did we hear? Looks like I think you started off with B-52s, didn't you?
I did, from their new CD.
Yeah, and what a great CD, too. I love that CD. Mm-hmm. We did Funplex from there.
Uh-huh.
Followed up by, I just did a random one. I let Merlin pick this one. From Pansy Division, we did Denny.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we had Erasure.
Yes.
Gimme, gimme. So.
Yeah.
That's what we had.
We used to play that at the beginning of the show a lot. Since we start at midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Well.
Oh, well.
But, yeah, it's a good one.
Well, like we announced at the beginning of the show, it's all Judy all the time tonight.
Yep.
I heard that
Judy
somewhere.
Judy 25.
Yes.
Well, I just finished with Theater Suburbia.
I heard.
Yes.
Very long, very nice, very good.
And they
hugely
sing.
Hugely funny show. And they
sing.
Well, I tried.
Yeah.
I saw the show last night. It was opening night, and it was really a wonderful show. It's hilarious. It's
funny,
it's
funny.
It's fast,
huh?
It's furious.
I heard a
wonderful
line about someone's head getting filled with wood.
Lost yes. Three quarters of his
head.
Knock on wood.
Right. Ouch.
So it was an interesting show.
That would have been Ashley Bilks.
Yes. Yes. It was a reprise. I mean, they did this show 12 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and actually Bruce Reeves was in it.
Dirty Dealings in Dixie, or
the cast was
one flew through, out the window.
Through, yeah,
through the window,
through
flew,
the window,
something like that.
Yes,
gone through the window.
Gone through,
oh, gone
window.
Through the window. Yes. Oh, okay,
the wind done gone.
Yeah,
okay. I like One Flew Through the Window.
Well, that's a whole different play.
oh, I'm sorry.
So anyway. So, hi, Brian.
Hi, Judy. Hi, Jimmy.
It must be Houston Arch time.
It could very well be.
Mm.
I have to do a shameless PSA first, though, for GCAM.
Okay.
Because it is GCAM night as well.
Okay. It is.
So, talk about the tickler one more time. Give it a little detail, because after you talk about it, I want to talk.
No, I want you to talk about the tickler, because I already talked about it at the beginning of the
but
show.
But you have to give the time and the date and the place and all that kind of stuff.
That would be... where's my
October 24th from 8 to 11.
It's over here.
See,
I told you were going to do it.
It costs $7 at the door.
Like it does at every adult bookstore.
And
it's an erotic art and object.
Auction. See,
auction.
I can't say that. He has to do that for me. It is.
No, yes.
Now, on top of
I think that's the first of its kind in Houston.
Oh, absolutely. I believe mm-hmm. that. But what you don't say when you're talking about the event is that we are now in the process of collecting art and objects for the auction.
We are indeed.
We have many pieces, and some of them are absolutely fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
But we would like more. So if you or some place where you do business or whatever would like to see about getting a piece or two for us to auction, that can be either artwork as in canvas or whatever form mm-hmm. of art it is.
Sculpture or objects.
Or objects, that's right.
An erotic basket of goodies is always
fun.
That
could work, yes.
Yes, or... all kinds of objects that would be considered erotic.
Like the one in my car right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show it to you later. We won't discuss it.
Is Jimmy going to be on display?
No.
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 But Jimmy and I are going to be at the door making sure that street legal clothing comes in the door.
Yes.
And
now, once
and
you're in the door.
And will be carded. No.
You
say street legal because I'll be in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I'm the bitch, remember? So. Anyway, that's my job.
And
it always has.
How could we forget?
I will remind you frequently. And that is, by the way, a capital B.
Did we reactivate her email
and
address?
She has the pin to prove it.
Yes, I do. 2-inch pinch pin.
It's gorgeous. Oh, my.
All yes. rhinestones. It's gorgeous.
Yes.
So, anyway. Okay, but no, that you don't mention that
we're
looking for items and so on.
Yes,
for this auction.
We
So I just wanted to throw that in.
We have... I've talked to Tim Brookover, who has tentatively agreed to be at the door to buzz people in.
I certainly don't have to worry about being street legal then. Tim will take care of that for me.
My.
Yes. We're going all out on this one. This is being put on by Mr. Prime Choice, Texas. It was his idea. His idea, would you?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Dennis Flanagan.
Yes.
And
he's very good at these things.
He's incredibly good. And and the more I talk to people about it and mention his name, the more I realize how many people in this town respect him and what he's done. And he's only been here a short 4 or 5 years. Spent some time in Dallas before coming to Houston. So he still got ties there also. But he's an amazing young man.
Yes, he is. And he's beautiful, too. It doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm.
And very sweet to talk to.
Yes,
I don't think he's ever met a stranger.
No. No, not at all. No. And he's so easy to talk to.
Absolutely.
And he has the most amazing lover,
yes.
Mr. Ed Crane.
Yes.
I love the way that he wears leather army camouflage and vinyl pants in the summer in Houston and pulls it off.
Yeah.
He has panache.
He does.
He does.
Plus, he's, Ed is an incredible carpenter slash engineer.
He's done many things for GK.
Yes, he has. Mm-hmm. He has. He devised a way to hang a very, very heavy...
Oh, it still scares me to walk in that hallway.
Yeah. Very heavy shadow box.
Display case, yes.
Display case, which is like 5 by 5 feet.
He did it with 4 little pieces of aluminum that I could bend with my hands. It was like, you're going to put that on the wall and put my case in it.
And it works.
Hadn't fallen yet.
It works.
So, it works.
Yes. It's fabulous.
Well, thank you very much for allowing me that shameless PSA for GCAM. It is, after all, GCAM Night. That is Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of GLBT
right.
History, Inc.
Uh-huh.
We can be seen or found at www.gcam.org. We can also be found, and this is going to kind of segue into our little discussion, at houstonarch.pbwiki.com. Is that correct?
That is, in fact,
right.
Correct.
Can you say that a bit slower so people can actually...
I wasn't sure I can get it right the first time.
To write that down.
Houston Arch,
A-R-C-H,
PBWiki, W-I-K-I, as in Wikipedia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. P, like peanut butter. PBWiki.
No, there's that Houston Arch dot.
The easier solution.
Oh, please help me.
Oh, please.
Just Google Houston Arch.
Ah.
And when you get past all the, not construction.
Houston
the
Arch,
architectural,
one word.
Yes. You get past all the architectural stuff, then there we are with history.
You can put it in as Houston Space Arch.
Mm-hmm.
You can put it in as Houston Arch. Google is really smart.
Oh,
knows
it is.
How to find the things that are like what you put in, whether or not that's what you meant.
Mm-hmm.
And there are enough people looking for Houston Arch's website that you will bypass the architecture thing
really?
That's downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And you will very clearly see the one that's about lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender history and its collaborative digital creation.
So what does Houston Arch stand for?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. It is an acronym, after all.
Yes.
It stands for Area Rainbow Collective History.
Ah.
Yeah. It's a very recent kind of invention that I'm very glad to see that GCAM was part of from the very beginning.
I have to say, I am too now.
You do not know how happy it makes me to hear you say that.
Brian had to drag me kicking and screaming into this collaborative effort, and I have to admit that I walked in with a very closed mind, walked out with an open one, and I'm so happy that we're working together now.
Actually, I didn't see any kicking and screaming. All I heard were a lot of really smart questions. That's me,
though. It's funny my cohorts didn't think so. They wanted to send me home. But, no, it's been a real journey. It has.
Mm-hmm.
In just a very short period of time, just less than a year.
Yeah. So GCAM is one of several organizations that's involved with this. It's a consortium, really,
mm-hmm.
That involves Rice University, University of Houston, the Charles Botts Memorial Archive and Library that's housed at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church. It also involves the Transgender Foundation of America Archive, which is housed in the Transgender Center at 713 Fargo Street, a few short blocks from here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So I love him, too. He has addresses in his head. I never can remember addresses.
It's a fabulous place. If you haven't been there,
Jimmy
it's
are going
a wonderful place.
Yeah. I've been by several times. It's a beautiful home.
It's gorgeous.
That
mm-hmm.
has been converted.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait to get inside and check it out.
Just that we're busy 5 days a week. We're trying to work that into the schedule.
I know.
But we really do need to get by there and talk to Kristen and Joe and
mm-hmm.
everybody and
mm-hmm.
see what it's all about.
Yeah, so it's a great partnership, I think, that's being created between these different entities.
So why do we even exist? Why are we all working together and doing things? We're all definitely three separate entities with all different kinds of things each.
Well, it's more than just three entities, right?
Yeah.
And what's interesting about it is that people can collectively achieve so much more than they can on their own, as GCAM already knows. That's why you have a 501c3, to have a lot of people preserving the objects and making people aware of them and displaying them and talking about them and having events that bring parts of the community together to remember, you know, who are we? What are we doing? But there's other kinds of goals that we might have, like making these things available online in a way that would survive over time and be available for researchers, for people in Singapore, for people in Botswana, for people in Katy, you know, to actually find more of the history than they might be able to just by talking to their friends, right? And some of that requires technical knowledge. Some of that requires knowing, you know, where in the warehouse is that box of, you name it, mm-hmm. you know, Mr. Prime Choice leather vests, a tiara from Miss Camp America, whether it's twits, whether it's photographs that someone took from the 1978 Pride Parade. You know, these are things that people have, but do we know that we have them? Can we find them?
No, we haven't. We just have no idea where.
Well,
yeah, that is a big problem with GCAM.
And that's part of what Houston mm-hmm. Arch is a collective group is wanting to do, just help the organizations that are already doing the work they do it consciously with each other in a way that will help it to work better in the future.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really great things is that, well, first of all, we gotten to know you better, because you and I had only met through Pride, and that wasn't pleasant. But we're friends now, I think. And Craig, who's our chairman of the board right now at GCAM, had never met Larry mm-hmm. over at BOTS. And he had met Joe, but only at GCAM meetings. So mm-hmm. because of your meetings every couple of months, and because of all the work that we've been doing via the computer, et cetera, for the last several months, Craig has had an opportunity as... He's been an active member of the community for a very long time, but he hasn't been an active history buff for a very long time. So he's gotten to know these people better and see what they're all about, as opposed to just what GCAM's all about, and we've become a really tight circle.
Yeah. I think what's really neat to me, I think the thing that I'm most proud of, actually, over this last year, really, is that this group of people has gotten to know each other mm-hmm. so much better mm-hmm. and to know what we can do collectively. I mean, we were already being collective, right, in our own,
sure.
not necessarily silos, that's far too isolated, that's not the image that I really want to conjure here, but we're a little bit more aware now mm-hmm. of all the different things that we could do, that we could be doing, mm-hmm. and I think that makes me proud.
And we're also aware of what other organizations have.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a good thing also, to know that if someone asks us for something, that we know, hey, well, we'll try over here or over there. And that is until we can get up and do what Houston Arch wants to do.
Well, it's funny. It sounds, I think, if you're listening to this kind of conversation for the first time, like, okay, what exactly... We know what GCAM does, right?
Mm-hmm.
GCAM has collected stuff and held it in places and had displays and educated people. And the BOTS collection has made lots and lots of papers available for people if they know to go there and mm-hmm. find them. And Transgender Foundation of America has this great walk-in space that you can go in Monday through Friday, 1 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and just browse and hang out and talk to people. Okay, so what is it really doing, this kind of collective thing? All these three organizations are already doing stuff. It's the work that the other members can do together without the universities. And I think the universities bring a really interesting piece to this, because organizations like GCAM do great work, but y'all have a show to put on, and how much time do you have to write a grant that would be for enough money
mm-hmm.
to do the work that you know needs doing? Universities have that kind of power. They have that kind of expertise. They have that kind of draw. And in fact, one of the things that I think it would be great to tell people a little bit about tonight is the thing that we've just recently accomplished as a group.
Absolutely. But did we cover what Houston Arch wants to do?
I think the grant is one part of that.
Yeah.
And it's just one part. So there's several moving parts to Houston Arch. One of them is oral history.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is collecting oral histories, educating people about how to collect oral histories, and making the process of doing that more democratic so that it's not the same old suspects, but can be everybody's contribution to our collective history. Another piece of Houston Arch is helping provide the funding for existing organizations to do what they need to do. Part of that includes making the things that are already around findable. Not just having a scanned copy, say, here's that original twit, This Week in Texas, for those of you who may be listening for the first time. Let's say we have a copy of that magazine. Great, we could scan it, we could put that up on somebody's website, that's wonderful. But there's a little bit more work that needs to be done to make that findable,
mm-hmm.
right? To make it so that somebody can say, put into Google, I want to see the first issue of This Week in Texas. Click. That work takes a little bit of expertise. Anybody who's done web page programming knows that kind of stuff too. That it takes that kind of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So Houston Arch wants to be able to bring together the people who know those kinds of things. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just the, you know what pieces are important to scan, right? But these other people know how to do that in a way that will be the right format over time. Here's the fancy data that you need to attach to that file so that other things like Google can find that file. All of that takes a little bit of time. And so the work that we've asked basically the federal government
yeah,
to fund. Yeah, we've asked as a group the National Endowment for the Humanities to fund these three archives as they create catalog records for the stuff that they have, which would be about a two-year project that would involve people from Rice University, University of Houston, GCAM, BOTS, and the Transgender Foundation of America.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we now wait to hear about that.
Because, I've been with GCAM from the beginning, and I know what we have. I know the amount of stuff that we have in the warehouses that we have them in. And getting it organized is just seems almost impossible.
Well, I mean, any mountain, right, that you look at
yes.
from afar, how yes. do you scale Mount Everest? It's this thing.
I know. But a lot of people have done it.
Right.
So,
right.
You have access to those people who have done it. And
they're going to educate me.
And this grant is going to fund the people to come and do that.
Correct, correct. But the thing that I think is best phrased about the grant is that it recognizes the expertise that already exists in the community and builds on it. In fact, one of the processes that I think happened during the grant that was amazing for me to watch is that we all knew the stories that we thought were valuable to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We knew that the twit, for example, is a valuable story. That is a collection that's worth making available and findable in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good example to actually talk about for just a little bit. The University of Houston, right, has at MD Anderson Library a whole bunch of This Week in Texas. But it's a partial collection.
Mm-hmm.
It only starts at volume 9, and then it's spotty. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's whole years missing. There's a few issues from some years that are gone. You just don't know. But they've got that, and that's findable. So if you wanted to look for the twit, that would come up for you. But what we could do with the work that we're proposing is fill in those holes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we can make available a complete collection now that was never available before. There's some other interesting things that kind of came up out of this. I know one of the holdings that GCAM has is a magazine called Sojourner.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, it was a fantastic publication out of MIT. For many decades, feminist writing, critique, humor, cartoons, poetry, you name it, but high-powered stuff.
Yeah.
And I did a little research to figure out, you know, well, who has this thing? Turns out, no one else in the state of Texas at a major library has a complete collection. No one else. UT Austin, Texas Women's, North Texas Denton, nobody else. They all have partial holdings. A bit here, a bit there, a bit here. Y'all have a complete collection. Do you realize that that's the only complete collection in Houston?
I do now.
Yep.
No, I didn't.
Now,
at this moment.
We have to
need a interrupt.
We do.
We got some business.
We do. We have some radio business to
okay.
do.
Give us a couple minutes. We'll be right back. Here's a few PSAs.
The Pacifica National Board will meet in person in New York City on Friday, July 24th through Sunday, July 26th, 2009. This meeting will be held at the Beekman Towers Hotel, 3 Mitchell Place, New York City. Note that this is 49th Street and 1st Avenue, the only tall building at that intersection. Previous in-person PNB meetings have typically included at least one closed section for discussion of legal and personnel matters. Session scheduling depends upon agenda approval for the entire meeting, which typically occurs on Friday. A closed session will be scheduled for Friday, July 24th, in the afternoon, and possibly Sunday morning. However, appropriate consideration of the business scheduled for public sessions could require a different scheduling of one or more closed sessions. Currently, the public session is scheduled to begin at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday. There's an executive session beforehand, which may run over. Starting times for Saturday and Sunday will follow when a draft agenda is available. KPFT Houston.
This is General Manager Dwayne Bradley to let you know that effective Wednesday, July 22nd, KPFT Houston rolls out its new weekday program schedule. This is the biggest schedule change in nearly a decade, and in short, your favorite news and talk programs are moving to morning and afternoon drive times, while music gets you through the workday. Big changes include BBC NewsHour shifting to 7 a.m., Democracy Now! At 8, Open Journal moves to 9 a.m., and a new morning music block hosted by Rourke Smith will be on from 10 to noon Monday through Friday. From noon to 1, we bring you the return of the World Cafe. Much-loved shows like New Capital, Connect the Dots, Earth 101, and Partisan Gridlock will anchor our afternoon drive times at 3 p.m. Democracy Now!'s rebroadcast moves to 5, while This American Life, Uprising, Explorations, and Alternative Radio move to 6 p.m. Visit kpft.org for the complete program schedule. Tune in July 22nd for the new KPFT. Houston.
You're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on Pacifica sponsored listener radio, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, and that's 89.5 in Galveston, and as always, www.kpft.org.
Okay, thank you.
Wasn't that fun?
Oh,
yes.
Always.
Now we know who we are and where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I feel enlightened.
All right, back where we were.
So I think we were talking about one of the collections.
Yes,
that you can.
The Sojourner.
The Sojourner. And I think it's a good example to go along with the twit of the kind of things that Houston Arch will be able to help make available, not just for the LGBT communities of Houston,
mm-hmm.
but for much wider audiences, right? And we're really talking about a global treasure, in a way, if you think about it like that. And the kind of history that's part of Houston is really not as present in the national consciousness as it should be. There are a lot of events that happened here that were nationally important that have somewhat gotten talked about,
mm-hmm.
right? But not necessarily. I mean, people know Lawrence versus Texas, right? And people know that Anita Bryant's singing here actually did kick off a full about 2-year-long series of events that culminated with the creation of Town Hall Meeting 1.
That's right.
And gave us the organizations which are now the backbone of the Houston LGBT communities, like the Montrose Counseling Center came out of it. Montrose Softball League had a large deal to do mm-hmm. with that.
Gay Political Caucus.
The caucus came out of it as well, although there were stirrings before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
A group I forget, how did they phrase themselves precisely? Because it was Ray and Rita Wanstrom.
And a few others, mm-hmm. who did that. And there were others, mm-hmm. apart from that group.
Mm-hmm.
I lived next door to a man who was actively writing to Congress people in Houston and the state of Texas on gay issues in the late 60s and early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And there were others like him around, kind of not really organized together, but they knew of each other.
Right.
So it was... back then, a lot of people were afraid to gather, to meet, to have meetings, to form an organization because of the laws.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 60s, I don't know about Texas because I wasn't that aware at the time, but I know that in New York, at the time of Stonewall and even before, it was illegal for three or more homosexuals to gather at one place at one time, as well as illegal to serve them alcohol.
Wouldn't there be a Bill of Rights with an amendment about freedom of assembly, I think it is?
Yeah, well, you know, there were a lot of laws like that back then.
Yeah. And I remember there was also something about a cross-dressing law really involved in, the tumble bugs.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. It used to be that women couldn't wear fly front pants.
That's right.
Because that counted as cross-dressing.
Mm-hmm. The zipper had to be on the side or in the back.
Well,
so there.
Like that helped.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of male friends who wear zippers on the side. Well, no, that's a whole different conversation.
We all have a lot of male friends who wear zippers in places that are not in the front.
I don't
of the
even
fly.
Want to know. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is after hours. We can say these kinds of things.
We can say this and more.
Now that the 13-year-old is gone.
Yes.
Okay.
But these bits of our history, right?
Yes.
They are in many ways absent, not only from the national stage, but also from the local stage,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's all well and good for us to talk about it on the radio, but what about the people who it would help them to know how to tell our local, regional, national story a little bit better, right? And to actually have the resources to be able to go back and say, this is what this person was thinking here. And in the process of creating this grant that we were just talking about, asking the government to fund the creation of electronic catalog records for the three archives that are participating in Houston Arch, part of that process required us to go through and look at all the different, we started calling them core holdings,
mm-hmm.
but the holdings that were really powerful and persuasive, right? What stories did they tell? How rare were they? How would they complement existing collections that are findable elsewhere, right? And some of the stuff that we found was just incredible. There are certain people who were writing diaries on a daily basis for decades,
mm-hmm.
and y'all have those collections.
Yes.
Historians go nuts over people's personal diaries, because it's one thing to like have, here's a whole bunch of newspaper articles that were written by one person, edited by someone else, changed by the master editor of the newspaper because there was a political side story that they didn't want to make hit the press, blah blah blah. So all the surface stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Easily findable magazines, newspapers, printed materials, even videotapes, right? Are massaged.
Sure.
Often enough, right? And historians know to look for those kinds of things. So they love seeing people's personal papers, because that's where the meat is. And BOTS and GCAM have those in a way that's really not around right now. And yes, there are papers. Anise Parker plans to give some of her papers to University of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
There are many other figures. Ray Hill has given some of his mm-hmm. personal papers to GCAM.
Mm-hmm.
And so these papers are really meaningful, not just as a, oh, you were some important person who made an impact that was visible to everybody else, but the papers of everyday people. And I imagine,
that,
too...
That kind of helps give you an idea of the mores of the time.
Exactly, right? Because people who are writing for themselves tend to not edit in the same way that people who see themselves as public figures do. And so their accounts are a little bit more... visceral. They're more meaty.
Because
they talk about where the zippers are.
I've had teenagers talk to me and say, "What do you mean the police were raiding the bars? Couldn't you do something about it?" And they don't realize the times that we lived in back then. It was a whole lot different. Mm-hmm. And with personal diaries, you get that flavor.
Absolutely. And I think one of the interesting things that Houston Arch also hopes to be able to magnify, this is already happening, but I think that public awareness of this, the public importance of personal history, is something that Houston Arch, as a group of people and a group of organizations, is kind of uniquely positioned to promote. Because think about this, right? I was just talking with David outside. He's a member of Primetimers.
Yes.
Okay. How many people in Primetimers have arranged in their will that their personal papers go to a historical society?
Probably very few.
Very few.
And how many of them have things in there that you know are really valuable?
Yes.
Not just to that individual person's life, but to our collective community, right? And to somehow help people see that, oh, that box of stuff that you might think is worthless, to help them see that, no, it's not worthless. It's of immense value. That's something that we're in a great position to do.
I can't tell you how many dumpsters I've been in the past 10 years because people do pass on and their families really don't care about that box of pictures or those twits or that story or whatever. And... yeah, dumpster diving just isn't fun when you're my age. I don't think it's fun at any age. I do it for the theater, too. But it really isn't fun. And, in fact, we would have lost a treasure trove of pictures had we not dumpster dived and gotten two big black plastic garbage bags full of pictures from behind the building where the voice was when they closed down.
Yes.
They just tossed them. They'd been in the papers. They didn't care. That's the kind of thing that we're losing daily. The owner of Bricks.
Yes.
When he passed away, his family came in. They could care less. Many community members, but specifically Craig and I, were over there dumpster diving for hours behind what is now George.
Right.
Because his family just came in and tossed it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the other sad truth is we've already lost several generations in this way.
Oh, yes. That the AIDS epidemic... created GCAM, as a matter of fact, because one particular person in our community got on a website and said, "Well, where's our history? Where's our museum in Houston?" And it got some people to thinking, and that's how GCAM got started.
There you go. What's interesting to me, too, is to look at other cities and other regions and how they've collected their history. And one of the things that Houston Arch did from the very beginning was to say, okay, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. First of all, we have several great wheels here, so let's start there. Second, let's look elsewhere to see how other communities have done their work. And so we've taken a look at the One Archives in California.
Oh.
We've taken a look at the Hormel Library in San Francisco.
Wow.
There's also the Stonewall Library in Florida. There's the Chicago Gay History Project.
Yes.
There's the Boston History Project. There's several different venues functioning in New York.
Sure.
But one of the more important ones, at least on the international stage, is the Center for Lesbian and Gay Studies at the City University of New York Graduate Center.
Mm-hmm.
And what we tried to do was to look at the different things that they were doing and how they were arranging themselves. And there's also kind of non-geographic places. There's this ACT UP Oral History Project. If you haven't seen it online, go look it up. ACT UP Oral History.
Hmm.
They have been collecting narratives from people who were active in ACT UP across the time from its beginning to the present day.
No kidding.
Knowing full well that it was one of the few moments where people had gotten together in the face of immense opposition
and indifference and made a difference sheerly by making themselves visible through whatever form they could, whether it was chaining themselves to the gates of the CDC, whether it was, as happened here locally, when an employee of a grocery store was fired because his roommate was HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
This employee worked in the meat cutting department. Some members of ACT UP took their little grocery carts, wearing their little t-shirts, announcing who they were, went into the meat section, filled their carts with meat, walked up to the checkout counter, left the carts, and walked right out the door.
I remember that.
It's a really beautiful gesture, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of stories now that future generations will have access to because this one organization decided to preserve its own history in a very creative and accessible way. How much more powerful could our future generations be if they have that kind of collective memory here in Houston?
Yes.
Yeah. Excuse me. I like to get on a soapbox about this. I get
passionate. No. That's why
I'm
here, glad
you. You're doing it much better than I would have.
Oh.
I would have with Jimmy, even. You know, this is the man with all the history. He just won't give it to me except little spurts like tonight.
Jimmy, I don't think you're often accused of giving things in little spurts, are you?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm not.
Not around this place.
Very different spurts. These are girl spurts, okay.
But Judy...
I harass him constantly.
She has been in the community longer than I.
Because I'm older than dirt.
So she...
Well, so is Jimmy, also, but we're not saying anything.
She also has quite a history to give. Mm-hmm. She's just being modest.
Well, I happen to live with the person who started ACT UP Houston, so mm-hmm. I was kind of in the middle of all of that, too. So.
And what is of some interest right now is that many of the members who were in ACT UP Houston have gotten together on a Facebook page.
Yes, I got an email from David Embry.
Yes,
the other day.
Fantastic, sweet man.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's not the only one. I got a message from Diane Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who used to be associated with this show.
Yes.
Long
yes.
ago.
Uh-huh. So it seems that there is a movement brewing. There's something happening,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the time is right, too. I mean, think about the kinds of things that are happening. If we thought about ourselves at one point in time as a marginalized population, right, we don't have that luxury anymore of thinking of ourselves as somehow the victim on the edge. Don't ask, don't tell, same-sex marriage,
mm-hmm.
These things are now at the center of the national stage. They're the center of the American story. They are front page news and make or break the lives of political national figures. And to talk about employment non-discrimination, to talk about gender identity and gender expression in the same frame that we do sexual orientation and sexual identity, it's a far cry from 40 years ago. We're not the same movement, and we can't afford to have the same, well, let's invent the wheel the first time around attitude that we used mm-hmm. in the 70s, even though there had been a pre-existing movement, the Mattachines and Harry Hay,
yes.
the Daughters of Bilitis, many pre-existing organizations prior to Stonewall, but the people who made Stonewall click as a national mythology of now we're doing it, now we've started it, right?
They went about it a whole different way.
They took a different yes. tack. They took a different tactic.
Quite yes. as we are.
And I think now we're at that same kind of watershed moment where we have to reinvent our movement.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it happening with organizations like Impact Houston. It's a different
yes.
style.
Yes, it is.
It's a different way of thinking about how to organize, how do you bring people in, what do you do. Some of it's technologically oriented, some of it's not. But what can't be lost in this, you know, recreation of ourselves is the sense of who we have been. And I think that the new movements in LGBT social movements in the United States today are aware of that.
but they're still lacking the access to the resources.
Mm.
And that's where Houston Arch comes in, at least here on the local scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all these other, you know, regional and city places like Chicago's History Project, the Boston History Project, the One Institute, the Hormel Library, and yes, GCAM, BOTS, TFA, right? That's where we come in. We are our, it's a little lighthouse, right? There be rocks over there. Don't go there.
What a wonderful way to put it.
Yes.
And people think that, you know, GCAM, we talk about what we have amassed over the last 10 years, and unfortunately a lot of it's in storage. Not all of it, but a lot of it. We do have 8 storage rooms, and they're all full to the brim. Like Fibber McGee's closet, for those of you who are old enough to hear that. Never mind. What people have never asked about and don't think about, I mean, if they want to do research, they immediately say, what do you mean I can't have that toilet? It's like, yeah, just can't have it. I'm sorry. That's the way it goes. We're trying to get there. They don't think about the fact that we take 16 boxes from them, and what they've done is empty their closet in the living room. And what we've done is created days and days and days and weeks of cataloging.
Yes.
And
organizing.
And organizing. And because we took it, I mean, it was like filling a glass of water. Nobody was around. I mean, okay, BOTS was around, but BOTS was not taking in collections at that point. They had Charles's Library, and that was pretty much it. Trenchant are founded, they were not around at that point. Mm-hmm. So GCAM came into existence. We started getting the word out as best we could, which computers weren't exactly what they are today as far as that's concerned. And people would dump boxes upon grocery bags on us, carloads of stuff. The first collection we took in from Houston was 64 boxes. I'm sorry. I'm just not that good on a computer. And we started getting behind the first month. So things like, you know, Houston Arch coming into play and teaching us how to do these things and getting into a program that all of us can use so that all of us are on the same team, so to speak, on the same note, it's like a shot in the arm to GCAM. I mean, I'm assuming BOTS and TFA feel the same way, but I know how we feel about the idea that there's actually going to be something out there that's going to be...
We will be able...
Something we can all use.
We will be able to get it organized so we can use it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's so important. That's the whole reason for being.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, though, one of the biggest problems that GCAM and all of us have had is volunteers.
Oh.
People want to dump their stuff on you, and they want to see everything you have, but they don't want to get in there and get their hands dirty. And that's not just a problem for GCAM. That's
overall. Contribute money.
And that would help too.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that. I mean, having worked in several different volunteer organizations, from my fraternity in college to Pride Houston, in different states, different cities, big cities, small towns, you know, volunteerism is a huge issue in the United States. Frankly, we're in a much better situation than many cultures when it comes to the way that we think about volunteering. Other nations do not have the same kind of volunteerism culture that we do.
Really?
That said, right, the way that we go about doing volunteerism is structured very differently.
Mm-hmm.
We create legal organizations through which volunteers flow, and it's a much more fluid and dynamic space, right? But because of that, volunteer-based organizations struggle to make themselves heard in this huge din of people clamoring for, we need people to give us their time.
Yep.
Right. And part of what I think Houston Arch might be able to do as a consortium is create a slightly louder megaphone to help people hear the message that they would respond to were they to be able to hear it. Think about the number of volunteers the United Way is able to create. Think about the number of volunteers the Red Cross is able to create. The size of the megaphone matters.
It does.
Right? The size of the community being served also matters. And I think part of what all of the archives imagine themselves to be doing is serving the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community at the same time. It's a much larger audience of people.
Everybody.
There's a much larger audience.
Also, people want to volunteer for an ongoing, a successful organization. Yes, absolutely, because it gives them more prestige, in a way.
And it's true. People volunteer for amazingly different reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Some people do it for deeply personal reasons that they never divulge, right? There was some one person that
was
really important to them, and this is their way of honoring that person's memory.
But everyone does it a little bit for their ego.
Sure, sure. I can think of a lot of people who serve boards very, very well, and I can think of a lot of people who volunteer and do very well at that for various reasons.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, and I hear people bitching about volunteerism in the GLBT community, and I think, you know, actually we have it made, but because for the most part, we do not raise children. I mean, some of us are doing it, but for the most part, we don't. So we have the available time, and we do volunteerism much more than the straight community does, on a percentage basis.
Well, I don't know the numbers on that. But
no, I don't know either.
I do know something actually kind of interesting, and this is an ongoing conversation in any kind of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, social organizing deal. I did my field work in Athens, Greece, with lesbian and gay activists on the way that they imagine the work that they do. And part of what happened there was I watched them debate, what does it mean to give your time voluntarily versus getting paid to do community organization work?
Ooh.
And there were a lot of parallels, but some significant differences with the American scene. One of the parallels was, if you're volunteering, it's altruistic.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting paid, it's self-interest.
Mm.
And one of the things that people were nervous about in Greece was saying, well, as long as I'm a volunteer, if someone doesn't like what I'm doing, I can just throw my hands up and say, well, if you don't like what I'm doing, I can stop doing it and walk away.
Yeah. Every time I've heard that.
Because they're not liable because they haven't been paid.
Mm-hmm.
Houston's LGBT community, for a very long time, was primarily volunteer-driven in almost every respect.
Yes.
It was only after Town Hall that we started getting the Montrose Counseling Center.
Mm-hmm.
The Montrose Clinic has its own really interesting history after merging with the Assistance Fund to now give us legacy.
Yes.
So there's a number of venues, AIDS Foundation Houston being one of them too, where we have this professional cohort of people who are paid to serve the LGBT community. But notice the services that are there. It's all about mental health provision, HIV provision,
mm-hmm.
you know, things where there's some kind of tangible funding from the government, to set up this realm of funding, right? Great. Everything else, what is that? Well, that's just something that you need to do on your own time. Putting on the pride parade, creating a 501c3 to preserve our history, right? So that delicate edge of who gets paid to do this is another kind of odd feature.
Yeah.
And I think that we should be proud of what we've been able to achieve through our volunteerism. At the same time, there's a limit to the permanence. And there's a limit to the kind of institutional space you can create with volunteers.
Yes.
And I think GCAM has really felt that and explored that edge.
Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I don't want to tell y'all's story. It's y'all's story to tell.
But it's nice to hear it from a different perspective.
It's nice to know somebody knows her story.
Yeah.
I mean, but what do y'all think about that? Do you think that that's something that can change? You know, what would it mean to professionalize Houston's LGBT history? What would that mean?
You know, with the right amount of money to have a permanent home where a lot more of us, our stuff can be displayed, or even a small library set up, or, you know, whatever, and have a paid, at least one paid staff person, that would give us more of the... it would put us out there more as a viable ongoing organization, mm-hmm. that people would say, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm going to do some volunteer work over there, you know, because there's prestige involved.
Sure. I mean, people enjoy being docents for museums.
Sure.
That have some kind of clout.
Just getting to the point of being grassroots to there.
Mm. Everything starts with small steps.
I've been walking in place for so long.
it seems like it, yes.
And now it's beginning to become an uphill climb because I'm getting old.
And, you know, and I hate to sit back and say, well, we'll be there as soon as, you know, somebody dies and leaves us their inheritance.
$1 million.
That's really tacky.
Well, and also I think potential donors probably would rather enjoy, you know, instead of watching from above or beside or however else, whatever life after ours is related geographically to ours. I have no idea. But I think donors really enjoy watching the fruits of their labor, the fruits of their gift, bear fruit in their own lives.
One would think.
And that's an amazing space to be able to create.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also of organizations like KPFT, right? And this is not something that was just, you know, poof, born out of the head of Athena, there it was.
That's right.
This institution right here, which has been an amazing part of Houston's LGBT community, an amazing part of Montrose,
mm-hmm.
right? And a big reason why Montrose has its flavor is because of what the space has been able to provide. So I bless my lucky stars that there are places like KPFT to create radio like After Hours and Queer Voices.
Yes.
Right?
We've been around since 1970, and every single year it has been a struggle to stay above water.
And people think, oh, I'm going to turn into After Hours because I'm in the car and I'm going home and blah, blah. But, you know, people talk about the fact that we don't have any weekly papers anymore to tell us what's going on so that we know who's doing what and where, and we can't keep up with it. And they think of the radio as, well, it's music, it's a bunch of queers talking. You are the calendar of the day. I mean, if I need to know what's going on, I call Jimmy because I know Jimmy has all that stuff right there because they spend the first 30 minutes of the show giving you the calendar for the next month. And I really get irritated when people say, oh, I used to listen to After Hours, but, you know, it's like, you want to know what's going on? You want to know where to go? Tune into the radio. This is all we have.
It's something that evolved because we do not have a weekly paper anymore. We've always done it, but not as strongly as we do it now. Because I feel
20 years ago, I was that calendar person.
It's a responsibility that we have here to do that.
Okay.
And without the newspaper, then our shoulders are a lot heavier.
Well, I think one of the hard things of community-driven media, right, is that somebody's got to pay the bill somewhere.
Yes.
And even when you have a great number of volunteers to help run an organization like KPFT,
mm-hmm.
There's still the lights, there's still the fund drive,
yes.
There's still the numbers that have to be counted. Did you bring in enough money during your hours, mm-hmm. during the pledge drive, mm-hmm. et cetera? And all those numbers move along chains to figure out, well, who gets to keep their time slot and who doesn't, right? It says something that there are two separate broadcasts, right,
mm-hmm.
on KPFT.
And in the Pacifica family, there's more GLBT programming at KPFT than anywhere else, more than New York, more than San Francisco, more than L.A.
another part of our story that's underheard.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, too, you know, we do have in Outsmart and the Montrose Gem what still is, you know, a part of a... It's an ecology, right? It's a system of how information moves through our community. And because that weight changes with economics, you know, who can afford to run a weekly paper?
Yes.
Right.
And newspapers everywhere, gay, straight...
it's been horrible.
It's been horrible, yes. Because I think we are changing the mode in which we gather information or look for information.
Well, part of the pressure that's been making things move, right? I mean, people like to say, well, the internet is our blessing and our curse at the same time. And there's some wisdom in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's enabled people who couldn't afford older technologies like radio or print to stay connected in ways that are updatable, immediate, accessible, broadly broadcast,
yes.
Right? At the same time, here's a bit of irony. There's this thing called the Gay and Lesbian Smart Brief,
mm-hmm.
right? It's associated with the Victory Fund. It's
yes.
a twice-weekly email, right? And in it, there were two news items on this most recent one. One of them was Giovanni's Room
mm-hmm.
needs $50,000 to repair a brick wall that is structurally unsound.
Oh, no.
Giovanni's Room has the unfortunate distinction of being now the oldest continuously operated gay and lesbian bookstore in the United States
yes.
after Oscar Wilde Bookshop closed its doors in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that $50,000 number came up again. That $50,000 number is also the amount that is needed by the San Jose Community Center as emergency funding to stay open.
Oh, God.
Both of those news items were present in this electronic email. Now, it's an odd bit of poetry if you think about it, because this internet technology has enabled us to actually stay in touch in ways that are amazingly much more fast and accurate, right, than any of the technologies we had before.
Mm-hmm.
But because people are going to those venues, because they're freer, cheaper, faster, more accessible on your iPhone, wherever you are,
yes.
the older venues that we cherish are being undermined.
Yes.
The very things that we're doing because they make our lives easier are undermining the parts of our lives that we want to keep. So we're going to have to make a choice somewhere. We're going to have to make a choice to how do you do both. That's, I think, one of the things that Houston Arch as a collective group has been able to see, is that there's ways to combine both. There's ways to combine the power that the internet can provide in terms of access, reliability, democratic nature of the information that's flowing around,
mm-hmm.
and use that to direct people to institutions like GCAM, to organizations like BOTS, and to make organizations like University of Houston and Rice more deeply connected,
yes.
right, with these existing organizations. So I think that's really the direction that we have to go. We have to somehow find a way to harness this new technology in a way that it doesn't kill the community that we are now.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that. I can't even begin to understand. I'm a 20th century man being dragged into the 21st century against my will.
I'm still in the 19th century.
I will admit it.
An ex of mine accused me of being Amish. Because mm-hmm. I didn't have a car or a cell phone when I met him, both of which I acquired during our relationship.
Uh-huh.
And then he said, aha, you've been converted. And I said, no, I'm still a neo-Luddite at heart. I like pencil and paper when I write. Thank you very much.
Yes, but you can operate one of those iPhones.
Mm, yeah,
see?
But I still refuse to send email from it.
I wouldn't even know how to. I don't even know how to turn it on. You know, it's like okay. I did learn how to do Excel and Word when GCAM came into existence. Now, that shows you how far behind the times are.
And that's why we are museum pieces.
Not you yourselves. Yes, not you yourselves.
You know, the very first article that... I think it was the Texas Triangle.
Yes.
It might have been The Voice. Wrote about... It's like... They referred to me as a relic. I'm like, how rude is that? I was like, okay.
Well, if you want to take the positive spin on that, I mean, people take pilgrimages now.
It's okay
right?
now. But 10 years ago, it was not okay. I didn't have all this gray hair 10 years ago. You know, but it's like, and this relic is standing in the middle of the... I went, what? So, yes. And, yeah. You know, now I freely admit it. I've never denied my age. I've never... Hell, I've looked old all my life. Mm. But I just, you know... That's one of the reasons that Arch had to bring me kicking and screaming into the crowd here. It's because you kept saying computer. And you kept saying program. And you kept saying... It's like... These are not a language I speak. And I challenged him. I don't know if you know, I challenged Brian in the very first meeting I attended for Arch. And it was, if you can get down on my level and teach me how to do this, you're a better man than I.
And he's done it.
No, he hasn't. No,
He's
getting there. It's baby steps. We're moving into that. And when the NEH money comes in, and they start, you know, actually accessing these programs and doing things and teaching us how to do this, the challenge is still out there. I got a divorce over computers. Did you know that?
You still have come a long way.
It's not just Virginia Slims, baby.
I have the Marlboro Man myself. But okay.
Well, funny enough, the National Endowment for the Humanities is not the only place from which we'll be seeking funding for this consortium. We'll also be seeking funding from the National Archives and Records Association. We're also looking at funding from other places here locally. I think that one of the things that we do better, right, when we think collectively, is that we're able to be more persuasive, right? We know that GCAM has this part of this collection, and BOTS has this part of this collection. Both parts are now invisible to the world, right? How do we make this greater whole now visible to everybody else who needs it and wants it and has been looking for it, right? There are faculty at both Rice and University of Houston who are interested in doing work on Houston's LGBT populations. Dr. Eric Walther at University of Houston in the History Department is wanting to write a multi-volume history of the LGBT movements in Houston. I myself am working on a book on the history of the Montrose neighborhood, in which the LGBT community plays a huge part, but it is by no means the only part. We should also speak of the Greek communities.
Oh, yes.
We should also speak of the Chinese consulate and how it came to be here, a very interesting story.
Oh, I bet that
the
is. I never knew that.
The Italian populations. Think about the different immigration waves in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. When did they hit, and where did they first settle, and why did Montrose get its character?
Yes.
That would be a large part of it. Look at where the other consulates are. The Mexican consulate? Very close to downtown.
Very close, yes.
If you think about Houston as a series of concentric rings, its history is like a tree ring, right?
It is.
The younger it is, the further to the outside it is. So Montrose, very smack in the middle. Giving a history of Montrose is like giving a history of the United States in small.
Wow.
Yeah. But where do you get the material to tell that story? And that's where organizations like y'all's are extremely important.
Wow.
She didn't feel so important before, did you?
Well, I'm thinking about this guy doing a three-book history on Houston, and I'm thinking, damn, James Sears did a three-book on the whole South.
I actually thought about bringing Rebels, Ruby Food, and Rhinestones with me tonight to read some parts from it, because he's got great stuff in there. But there's only just a few parts that are about Houston.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's telling stories about Birmingham and Atlanta and Biloxi.
I know.
This is great stuff, right? But, you know, for most people, no, that was there, right?
He was actually at the first GCAM meeting.
He's on your advisory board, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's the one that told us that in lots of... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That in so many other towns, usually smaller towns, the entire GLBT history is held and collected by one person in their home.
Often.
And what happens if that person dies?
I have a key to his apartment.
I think you stayed there for some time.
A few days shy of
you. I'm talking about...
I know what I'm talking about.
Other small towns.
Right.
Because I can remember back in the 70s and 80s reading a twit and knowing that there was one person in Dallas who was like the caretaker of history there. Which now seems a little odd. I mean, the city the size of Dallas, that only one person was collecting history.
You know that's actually the origin of the Botts collection, right?
No, I did not.
Okay. Way back when in the dusty reaches of time.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Called Aura.
Aura?
Yes, A-U-R-A.
Sorry.
Yes. Not oral, aura.
Yeah.
And their collection migrated down to Houston.
Oh.
With Charles Gillis.
Yes.
That collection was housed at Wildenstein Bookstore, which then passed its collection to a group at that time known as Integrity. But...
The Episcopals?
No. The Episcopal organization was founded after this original Integrity, which then changed its name to Interact Houston to avoid conflicts of naming, right?
Okay.
So Interact Houston adopted the collection that had been held at the Wildenstein bookstore when that bookstore closed.
Mm-hmm.
Interact Houston, however, was having a little bit of trouble trying to figure out what to do with it, and they approached Charles Botts, who had been at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church back when it was on Decatur, and he was managing their library, and they approached him and said, well, what would you do with this if we gave it over to you? I'd keep it. Great. And that's how all that landed there.
Wow.
So literally, it has been like an Olympic torch that has been passed by person to person to person. So that one person who you were talking about in the twit likely is now memorialized somewhere in the Botts collection today.
Amazing. Well, I knew that Judy was involved with RMCC back when it was MCC.
When it was cratering on Decatur.
When it was MCCR.
Right.
And you were there when the Botts collection came to the to the church, but I really hadn't talked to you much about how it got there and the trip it made.
Now, I have to give a lot of credit. That story I did not dig up myself. That story I have to give every ounce of credit to Joe Collier. Joe Collier, in volunteering at GCAM and at Botts, has amassed a wealth of our history on a website called Queerstorical Houston, which she allowed to be the template for Houston Arch's website.
Right.
So the work that's happening today literally has been built on the shoulders of many, many people.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Gosh. So, what's next?
Well, that's for us to decide as a community now, isn't it? I think part of what's next is our
oral
history. Does
he ever answer a question directly?
No. Did he ask a question? No.
I think the Peanut Gallery is agreeing.
I have this nasty habit of recognizing that I'm just one person in a huge sea of people who know a lot more than I do. It's kept me sane. And one of the things that happens when you think like that is, wow, big decisions get made by lots of people. One of the decisions that came out of these different meetings that Houston Arches facilitated over the last year was that our oral history is an amazingly big priority.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are planning at the next meeting for Houston Arch, which is tentatively slated for August 19th, and will probably be held...
August 19th, huh?
August 19th.
You know, yeah, okay. Can anybody come to this meeting?
Anybody can come to this meeting.
You know, we have this thing at After Hours where we talk about events coming up.
Yep. Yeah. And this is why I say tentative, because we haven't confirmed the place. Confirmed the time.
Okay.
But the plans are being made. Originally, it was thought that we might do it on the 12th, but when we realized that that was the date of the Society for American Archivists meeting in Austin,
Oops.
We decided that would be a bad time
yeah.
to do that, since
yeah.
several of the people who are important to this venture would be there
mm-hmm.
and not in
What's
Houston.
What's with the 26th?
The 26th?
Mm-hmm.
A suggestion for the 26th?
Yes. It is not a third Wednesday.
Which would be the Houston Council of Clubs
yes.
meeting. Yes.
I've been pushing to get it off the third Wednesday, Jimmy. Trust
okay.
me.
Okay.
I think that that might
I
be
think,
that
yeah.
might that might could
yeah.
happen. That might could happen.
Surely we can confirm something at MCC or something.
I think that might happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds
so
good to me.
It's a good thing to have conversations with people. You learn these things and you remember these things. Yeah.
Well, you know. And
I like his brain in meetings.
Mm-hmm.
He retains everything and he can repeat it back to me because I retain nothing.
So one of the things that would happen at this next Houston Arch meeting is a more considered approach to oral history, right? And start getting people plugged into the different parts that need to happen for that. There are a number of people who've already been collecting oral histories,
mm-hmm.
like the students
yeah.
in the class that I teach at Rice, the Introduction to Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Studies. They have been, for the last now 3 years, interviewing people from Houston's LGBT communities.
Jimmy and I have been on that list before.
Yes. And those interviews have, for the last 3 years, been part of the history tent at the Pride Festival. The list of people is quite large. There's about 350 names
wow,
of
fabulous.
People who volunteered to be on that list. There's also Arden Eversmeyer. She's been collecting oral histories, not just here in Houston, but in all sorts of places. And just incredible work, you know, that she's put into that. Sarah Fernandez has also done a large number of videotape interviews. GCAM has a videotape series of people who've been interviewed in kind of community settings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like an audience roundtable. And all of these different things are part of our collective history. So how do we kind of pull them together into a space where they can be more readily available, kind of on the model of the ACT UP Oral History Project, right, where this one organization put all of its members that it could find through the same process of, like, tell us how you became a member of ACT UP. What was it like? What did you do? What was the most memorable moment? And that's a treasure trove.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So that's the next step, because we know that not everybody's contributions are presently visible
right.
in the stuff that GCAM has or BOTS or TFA. There's holes, and oral histories are the best way to fill those, because so many of those people are not necessarily going to be with us for the longest time.
I know a lot of the ones that GCAM have are either no longer with us or no longer in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
They've moved away.
Yep.
Retired to other locations.
True
I'm
enough.
So jealous. excuse me, but I digress, yes.
Yeah.
So, I don't think I'll ever retire. I think as long as I'm
I don't think you have it in you to retire.
Like,
you don't strike me as that kind of person.
No, because when I'm not working with GCAM, I'm working on my own personal history.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people keep journals and so on. I've journaled for years. It's like nobody wants to read that garbage.
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure about that.
But I am in the midst of my second book.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Excellent.
I've gotten back into writer's mode this last week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I put 60 pages down, which is a huge... a number of pages when you're writing a book.
Mm.
So I'm excited about that. But GCAM is a huge part of some of that writing. Excuse me.
And can you give us a little preview?
No, you don't want a preview on this one because, honestly, this book that I'm working on right now is about my parents' murders.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
Not GCAM or history of Houston. But my first book had some.
Yes.
It was a smattering.
Mm-hmm.
And... it'll end up being the first of four books about my life in Montrose in Houston. So, second book's almost finished. I have to pull it out of the old computer.
You are full of surprises, Judy.
No, not me. I'm just old. I've been around a long time. I do a lot of junk. But, so, being a writer, I think, and not necessarily just published, but being a writer at all, having an interest in that kind of stuff, I think is a lot of why I'm so interested in history. Of course, my stepdad didn't hurt that either. He was a history buff, and I would have been or been very short because he kept hitting me on the head. So, you know, it's interesting. But people don't realize that oral histories and journals and that kind of stuff are important to the rest of the world.
Mm.
It's like, I get this from Jimmy all the time. It's like, oh, it's just my stuff. It's like, yeah, Jimmy, and everybody wants to see it, you know.
So. Well, you never realize the importance of a lot of things as they happen. It's only afterward that you realize, wait, that set in motion a huge number of things,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that's also part of the wisdom of projects like the StoryCorps project that National Public Radio is involved in. I don't know if people actually, you know, listen to both radio stations.
Of course they do.
NPR and KPFT.
Oh, they do.
Every once in a while on KUHF, you'll probably hear these things from StoryCorps,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, there's this booth that travels all the way around the world, at least of the United States, and people can enter it and have a little interview, and that interview becomes part of the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that says something about who we are as a nation, that we value, at least in some way, we try to make space to value the daily lives of people, no matter who they might be. That's not a luxury that other cultures and other nations necessarily have at their disposal.
And I think it's because we are so different than other nations in that we are not a nation of one people. We are a nation of many, many different people, different types of people, different races, where you don't have that elsewhere.
Well, it's increasingly so.
So these people have come from different places, come from different value systems, have different lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it so interesting.
And I think the United States has a very odd sense of its own history and how it relates to that diversity that it holds, right? Other nations have a little bit more experience dealing with their diversity,
mm-hmm.
but that hasn't made them any wiser at it, I'd have to say. I think we've been forced to be conscious of it because of how brief our nation's history is.
Sure.
But, I mean, just earlier tonight, I was having dinner at 59 Diner. On the other side of the aisle, there was a Chinese woman sitting with a Sikh,
mm-hmm.
having dinner across from the white gay male couple. Which, to me, just, you know, that is, boom, here's Houston.
Yeah.
We are a cosmopolitan
sure.
city at the 24-hour diner next to a freeway. Right? This is who we are.
Cholesterol head.
Actually, I have the pancakes. No, but I think it's interesting, too, the way that we perceive other places in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way that we look at our own history through comparing it to theirs, right? Oh, we're in such a better place because we don't stone gays and lesbians to death, right? we're in such a better place because we don't force women to wear burkas. Well, we force a lot of women to wear high heels and amazingly uncomfortable clothing. I don't know. I don't see a huge difference between those things. I'm joking just a little bit, but...
Yeah.
Not really. 10 years ago, I had one of those jobs. I didn't have an option. Yeah. No pants. High heels.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we don't look at it that way.
Mm.
But you're right. It's exactly the same.
It's similar enough. Similar enough that when we talk about ourselves as somehow being better or better off, it rings a little hollow.
I have traveled some, mostly in Europe, and I've had wonderful times, but I'm always happy to get back home.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No matter how much fun I'm having or how great I think the country is that I'm in, there's always something about coming back home.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. And there's something about Houston, too. I grew up in North Carolina. I grew up in a really small town. And then moved to progressively larger towns.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hit Houston.
Wow.
And I stopped. It's a great place. It's a really well-kept gem of a city.
I grew up in a little small town in New Jersey. And then overnight, I found myself living in Manhattan.
Mm.
And, wow, that was way too much city for me. And when I got to Houston, I thought, this is perfect.
The Goldilocks moment?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yes. Because, especially back in the 60s, there was a whole lot more green in the Montrose than there is now. But still, it was big city plus the Montrose, which was like a small town.
Yeah.
And still is.
Yeah. And actually, Houston has that character.
Can I interrupt for a moment?
Small I think you need to.
Yes, I do. It's time for a little bit of business.
Okay.
So we'll be back after a couple of PSAs.
Okay.
Aurora Picture Show joins forces with the Manil Collection to present two free outdoor screenings, Friday, July 31st and Friday, August 14th. The Manil Summer Movies in the Park series will begin with a screening of the 1952 Western film, High Noon, followed by a screening of short excerpts from some of the best-loved classic television Westerns in August. These free screenings will take place outdoors in the Manil Park, 1515 Sol Ross. For information on community activities, visit KPFT's events calendar at kpft.org. KPFT Houston.
The Houston Press Music Awards Showcase, featuring 50 bands on 10 stages. Sample the sounds of over 50 local Houston bands on Sunday, July 26th. Doors open at 4 p.m., bands begin at 5 p.m. Wristbands, t-shirts, and tanks are on sale now at Cactus Music, on HoustonPress.com, and at all participating venues the day of the event. Participating venues include House of Blues, Hard Rock Cafe, Rock Bar, Mosaic, Flying Saucer, Isis Houston, Martell's, Red Cat Jazz Cafe, and Dean's Credit Clothing. Attendees must be over 21. New this year, complimentary shuttle services provided by Super Shuttle. Proceeds benefit the Music Therapy Center of Houston. Coming July 26th. Don't miss this year's Houston Press Music Awards Showcase. KPFT Houston.
You are listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, here on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. And once Jimmy stops talking, we'll kick the mics back over to there.
Yeah, they're back on now.
Okay.
Hello.
And Chris is back.
Yes, he is.
Oh, you just now saw
Isn't
him?
Isn't it nice to see him tonight?
It is nice.
It's a little gray around the gills.
We explained that you're part of the Houston Big Men's Club, and you were serving drinks at in the doghouse out on the patio of the Ripcord.
Yes, slinging beers, and I made 100 Jello shots earlier today.
Oh my goodness!
Well, from what you were telling me, beer wasn't the only thing you were slinging tonight. Didn't you sling a coaster at somebody?
I threw a coaster at somebody.
Yeah.
I'm sure they deserved it.
He does.
Somehow, hearing the word sling and Ripcord don't make me think about coasters.
Thing, maybe.
True about that. Yeah.
I believe the crowd from Theater Suburbia was going through the court after they left here.
I'm sure they were.
That's what they told me. I just I was like, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Tourists.
Okay, then. Well.
Yes, next to Kathy Griffin, I'm going right down that fireman's pole.
There you go. There you go. Okay.
Going downhill fast here, girl. All right. So we're back.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we never left.
I know. I know. So.
They keep beeping at us in there.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well.
That's our doorbell. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything on the weekends, everything is focused in the control room. Everything that
goes
on in the building.
You know what? There's five people in there, and none of them look very focused to me. Chris doesn't look like he can focus.
Who are you counting? There's only three people standing here right now.
Oh, yeah, my. Yeah.
These are my new glasses.
Yeah, but you're saying five.
Oh, yes, I said they're my new glasses.
There's a settling in period.
There were five. There were five.
Okay, and just for that.
Chris counts as one.
There were five.
No lines, honey. I only count as one.
The children were standing behind Wes a few minutes ago.
Oh, that's right.
There were a
thank
couple,
you.
I did have my hands full. I'm sorry.
I'm old. I'm not crazy. Jeez.
But I was enjoying myself.
Okay.
I saw.
In response to that, I'm going to have to ask this. Since you said you're writing a journal of a story of your life now, mm-hmm. how many chapters are called Jimmy's Couch?
None yet. He's in the fourth book.
Ah.
Oh, we haven't even gotten to that book.
No, we have the
whole book is called Jimmy's Couch.
Yeah.
No. It's Judy at jimmyscouch.org.
Coming soon to Lifetime Network. Jimmy's Couch. Who's going to play the pussy?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I have just the right girl
Morris
for
the
it.
Cat?
She's at my house.
I love Judy's cat.
Jimmy loves my pussy.
I just got back from watching Are You Being Served before I came over here.
Uh-huh. Yes, we've been...
We did a whole tribute to that.
Yes, when Molly passed, we did a 7-minute tribute we found on YouTube of her best pussy stories.
Oh, Miss Hudgen.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, we are going downhill fast, are we not?
Okay.
So moving right along, the possibly another meeting in August.
So for those of us who are just now tuning in, this whole conversation has been about Houston Arch, mm-hmm. which is a new consortium formed of GCAM, the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of GLBT History, Inc., the Charles Botts Collection, which is really the Charles Botts Memorial Archive and Library, housed at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church, up on the bio. And there's also the Transgender Foundation of America Archive at 713 Fargo.
He's amazing.
Other members of this new consortium include Rice University and the University of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I should take a moment to also say that we are very seriously inviting other organizations to join.
Mm.
Organizations that we know have a great amount to contribute, and we want them to be able to be in from the beginning. We are very interested in making sure that the Houston Public Library is invited mm-hmm. to consider cooperating with this consortium, as well as Texas Southern University. I think it's extremely important that the legacy that TSU has created for the community not be ignored.
You bet. Right.
And I'm not only talking about certain faculty members, like Gene Harrington,
mm-hmm.
who, as one of the white faculty members at TSU, was also extremely active in Houston's LGBT communities.
You bet.
But to make sure that the entire legacy that TSU has made available is part of our history and is not left behind. So these different organizations functioning as a kind of cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That's what Houston Arch is all about, kind of leveraging the different things that those institutions like the library, like Rice University, leveraging what they can do to help the collections do what they want to do better. The collections like GCAM and Botts. So this next meeting on August possibly 26th, We are exploring that date.
Mm-hmm.
We will have much more firm information before August rolls around.
And you will be hearing it every week right here on After Hours.
There you go. And we'll make sure to let the kind people at Queer Voices and Outsmart know about it as well. The focus of that meeting will be on oral history, because what Houston Arch has already been able to do is submit a grant to the federal government to support the creation of electronic catalogs for the existing archives.
Mm-hmm.
And the next piece that needs to start moving alongside of that electronic catalog is the collection of other people's stories that aren't already somehow in the mix.
Yeah.
Because everyone's got a story to tell.
You bet.
So, I can't thank you all enough for the work that y'all have put in to make this moment possible.
Thank you. And you have been the kingpin in getting it all together. You know the words to say. You know how to put the grant together.
You know all the right people.
It's something that we as different organizations have not been able to do. We don't have that expertise. We don't have the time. We don't have the knowledge to do it. So without you, it wouldn't happen.
That without us, without us, nothing. It's true.
Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you all.
And thank you for being on After Hours.
Happy
for the All Judy, All the Time show.
I heard that somewhere. Well, you know, if I can put shows like with guests like this together, y'all are lucky to have
it. You bet.
Did I say that? Well, you know, first I had 20 actors who couldn't sing, and then I had a very talented man from Rice University. So
yes.
It works. Thank you, Brian, for coming.
Thank you.
Next time we do this, we'll bring more people in, and it'll just grow each time.
I hope
they
so.
They did better than most happy birthday singers at a party.
Well, that's kind of true, but they've been in 7 weeks of rehearsal, though. You'd think after 7 weeks they could at least all finish on the same note.
Never happened.
Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Judy.
You're welcome. It's time for music.
Yeah.
Get together.
any good stories, Chris?
Oh, my God.
I'll take that as a yeah.
I'm the only
one. Oh, my God.
And that, too.
Whoa. I really ought to read this stuff a lot earlier.
You need to.
Oh, my God.
That started off weird and went...
Went weirder?
That took a left turn into crazy town.
All right, all right. Where's the crew?
Out there. Tell them there's a furry story.
That'll
get
it. Oh, his mic's not even on.
There we go. Sorry about that, Merlin.
Tell them there's a furry story. That ought to get a few of them in here.
Not a happy one either. On this day in history,
woo!
Actor Paul Reubens, a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman, is arrested in Sarasota, Florida for masturbating twice with his left hand inside the South Trail XXX Cinema. Was screening the triple feature Catalina 5-0, Tiger Shark, Nancy Nurse, and Turn Up the Heat. Following his masturbatorial debut, Reubens loses his children's television show and product endorsements.
Oops.
You know, I was living not far from there when that happened.
That was in 1991.
Dear God. Wow, that was a long time ago.
Now, of course, he made his return there going to the MTV, whatever awards they were doing at that time, going, have you heard any good jokes lately? I'm trying to find some other stuff here. Let's see. Look here.
Now, did we ever find out if Pee Wee was really Pee Wee?
They didn't take it. Yeah, they didn't have any pictures inside there. No.
Oh, okay.
Darn.
Trying to see if there's any other gay stories in our week in history. Rock Hudson acknowledged he has AIDS on July 25th, 1985.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't find many stories, so I was kind of trying to dig around.
He was dead pretty quick after that.
What's the... Devin gave me one to talk about, and I was looking at their way. The clothing line, or clothing manufacturer, American Apparel, has gotten a little bit of trouble at their Washington, D.C. store. Their store was vandalized.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Because we had one of their shirts out on display... called that says legalize gay, which technically Lawrence v. Texas did, but wow. It says legalize gay, repeal Prop 8 now. From Silver Spring, Maryland, a pro-gay t-shirt on display at the American Apparel store in Silver Spring prompted vandals to smash the front window. The shirt reads, legalize gay, and in small letters, repeal Prop 8 now, referring to the California measure banning same-sex marriage. Earlier this week, the window was smashed. American Apparel blames someone upset about the company's support of same-sex marriages. Vandalism could be related to threatening phone calls made to apparent American Apparel stores. As recently as Wednesday, workers at both the Silver Spring and Georgetown locations have received calls threatening them for not taking the t-shirt down. Montgomery County Police are investigating whether vandalism is a hate crime. Originally, another report I saw that they had said that they were going to remove the shirt display from the store there in Maryland. And, corporate office called from Los Angeles and said, no, you're not. So apparently they are going to be going full throttle with keeping these shirts out in the public for people to see and hopefully purchase.
I think I read an article where they were saying that they temporarily moved it off out of the showroom window, and then we're supposed to be putting it back, I guess.
It'd be interesting to see if the one here in the Montrose has that shirt up.
Yeah,
that drama happens here in Montrose. I'd be like, you gotta be kidding me.
Oh, yeah.
I really hadn't found many stories on here. In mid-July, Johnny Depp mentioned to the UK Mirror that his dream role would be to play Carol Channing.
Carol Channing?
Yes, Carol Channing.
Well, after his performance as Willy Wonka, he wanted to play something a little more masculine.
Got a point.
Yeah.
My dream role would be to play musical legend Carol Channing in a biopic of her life. I love her. I really do. She's amazing.
Certainly a much more butch voice.
Yes. Come out, Johnny. Just give it up. You're
everyone knows that.
We know you played a pirate because you wanted to be a butt pirate. Now you're saying you want to play Carol Channing.
And he played a man with a bunch of little short people around him. Wearing gloves all the time.
Yeah, I mean, we actually we knew about that when he shoved a pineapple up his ass in Before Night Falls.
What?
He has played a cross-dressing gay prison guard in the movie Before Night Falls.
Yes.
And he shoved a pineapple and someone's play up his ass so that he could smuggle it out of the prison.
Wow.
I've heard of keistering, but that's amazing.
But Carol Channing says she'd love it, telling the Broadway world, "It's not a new concept to me, not at all. Men have been imitating me for as long as I can remember."
Yes, we know.
In fact, most of the impersonations I have seen have had a 5 o'clock shadow.
And she can remember all the way back to, I don't know, Moses.
I imagine when or if Johnny should portray me, he will succeed, because a true artist, such as himself, is one who loves his or her creation and therefore represents the honest view of that which they are creating. I think he's a gifted performer and would be proud, very proud, as well as interested in seeing what his vision of me would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She has a good point.
I'm still stunned that she's alive.
I know.
She's still alive.
I know.
Yeah, they were saying, they were trying to, let's see if I can find real quick how old that
Talk about building a career on one play.
Yeah. Hey, if you're going to build it, it might as well be.
She's an amazing woman. I was telling the guys during the break there that I actually met her one time.
No kidding.
In person. Yeah, when I was in Florida, part of the gay men's chorus down there.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the annual benefits that was going on. It was an awards benefit, and she was there. She was one of the guest speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And the gay men's chorus did Where the Boys Are. And she came over and sang with us. And she's a little short woman. Sweet as pie, but a very short woman. I mean, it's like...
Oh.
She's this tall.
How tall are you?
I'm about 5'9".
Okay, so she's about 5'4"?
Probably about that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's about my height.
Okay, now let's play the guessing game. How old is she?
She's stay out of this since I see it.
I think she's about 80.
Merlin?
Oh, I'm betting she's closer to 90.
Maybe. I say 80 with Jimmy here.
Mid-80s to near 90, at least.
You want to be a little more specific, because if we're playing by Price is Right rules, I got to be a little clearer.
Oh, I have to say 90.
Unfortunately, you went over.
Oh.
She's 88.
Wow.
Not by much.
Just like a keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's as old as a keyboard.
And she's probably been played like
she's
one.
Played.
Watch those sharps and flats.
Well, she buried two husbands and got rid of one, and she's got a current one now.
Wow.
Good God.
Wow, that's an... Is that really her?
Yeah, a picture from 1956.
Holy crap.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm. From 1956?
Yeah.
Hell, I looked good in 56.
She doesn't look like... She doesn't look like she looks now.
She had a different wig maker.
Different wig maker.
Yeah, but you were also this tall.
Well, yeah, I was single digit in age.
Oh my god.
Woo!
Okay,
one of those grapple, famous was, gravel voice.
He was single digit in age, but was still on his knees.
As a matter of fact.
Are we playing to tell the truth now?
I cannot tell a lie.
Speaking of game shows from the past.
He learned that from George Washington.
Directly from...
He blew him under the cherry tree.
Before the tree was chopped down?
That's how we lost our cherries.
They had to cut the tree down after that. You know, the evidence was all over the tree.
Well, please.
It was all in the bark.
Next, please.
There's got to be something gay going on in the universe.
There's a cute little picture here from
I See Religion.
A University of Georgia, I guess, website that they're showing off their football team.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the quarterback of this team, a quite appropriately named Joe Cox.
Oh, boy. Is he showing his off?
Like I said, I see religion.
Well,
apparently there wasn't a cup involved. Let's just say that.
Oh, goody. If I click the picture, it gets bigger.
Amazing what you can do with technology.
I got to see this.
Okay.
What's it look like, Jimmy?
Whoa!
Oh, God.
Yes, you can see his religion.
My.
In case you want to move a little further up on the body.
I do.
There's his face.
No, I don't care about that.
Oh. Jimmy's never interested in the face. Mm.
But he's ginger-haired.
He is that.
Yes. Physical attribute. Favorite physical attribute about myself is my hair. We beg to differ.
That's
and his least is his super fair skin.
Yeah, red hair, blue meat.
Dream dates Halle Berry.
What the?
Wow.
Okay, on both of the last two statements. Ew.
On his bedroom wall.
He drives a
member is prominently displayed underneath his football pants. And yes, he is not wearing a cup.
Yeah, well, that was
like I said, I see religion.
I see.
Very interesting. So he's probably getting a little bit of teasing on that. Oh, it was a thing for Sporting News Today.
Okay, so.
Let's put it this way. The picture is so well taken that even on Tola Road they say the profile picture is possibly not safe for work.
Oh. Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So, whenever he wants to go fourth and long.
Or third and short.
Yeah, no, he's a shower, not a grower.
Yeah, yep, that definitely gives a new meaning to going long.
Yep.
The stories are cute on there. You know, someone agreed he's a grower and a shower.
Uh-huh.
He ain't no shower. Looks started saying tiny dancer in there. Wonder why it wasn't airbrushed. Well, it's probably because the guys over at Sporting News Today weren't staring at his crotch.
Yep.
Lucky us.
I'll bet you he'll be getting some.
I doubt that there's probably one or two who are staring there.
Oh, he'll just be getting more dates.
Oh, yes.
Hey, you may get Halle Berry after that one. Okay, this little twisted story that I have found that I'm...
Yes.
For some strange reason, the furries are coming out to play in very strange ways lately.
I beg your pardon?
The furries. The
furries?
Furries.
Okay.
The group of people who use mascot outfits, costumes of various animals and such.
Mm-hmm.
This one's out of England. Or
somewhere.
It's not here.
.co.uk, yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't sure about it until I read down here, and the part that got me was when they said that she called 999. That's their version of 911.
Oh.
Hi!
So what happened?
Have you heard this story?
Which one?
One from England.
Well, why don't you say a little bit more?
To just tell the story.
Yeah.
Well, our resident furry walked in.
Ah.
A man plotted to kill his adoptive parents with the help of a friend he met on the internet, court had heard. Christopher Monks, 24, wanted Sean Scarves to murder his parents while they slept and perform an extreme sex act on him.
What?
The bisexual pair are alleged to have hatched the plot after meeting on an internet site about furries, people who pretend to be animal characters and share sexual role-playing fantasies. Please remember, this is what they're just saying on the air, on this website, describing it to others. Scarns, 19, visited Monk's family home in Preston Road, Clayton in Les Woods, in February after weeks of chatting him with online. The two played computer games before Scarns left, telling Mr. and Mrs. Monks he was getting a train home and thanking them for having him around. Monks then watched a DVD with his parents while Scarns waited hours in a play park nearby until he received a text from the friend telling him the couple were asleep in a four-bedroom house they shared. Mr. Monks woke in the early mornings to find Scarns beside his bed clutching a kitchen knife. He grappled with the intruder and yelled for help from his wife, who was sleeping downstairs.
Downstairs? Okay.
I thought he was trying to kill me. My wife tried to hit him with a stick, but it broke, and she began to try talking to him in a calming way. At that point, his manner changed completely. The couple went downstairs to find a police officer on the doorstep who had responded to Mrs. Monk's 999 call. Mr. Monks was left with bruised arms, a cut palm, and bite marks. Monks, who was downstairs during the attack, was initially treated as a witness, but then later arrested. A prosecutor told the court that while Scarns carried out the attack, these Monks stayed downstairs, deleting incriminating text messages.
Mm.
Here's where it gets weirder.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Watson said that Monks had talked about his sexual desire for his penis to be bitten off in online chat room discussions.
Ooh.
Wow. He told the jury it may seem extreme that he wanted his penis bitten off, but there are ample evidence from websites he visited in conversations with Sean Scarves that this was a deeply held interest and one he found sexually stimulating.
Hmm.
It seems Scarns was to receive no money for killing Mr. and Mrs. Monks, but the prospect of biting off Monk's penis. This was the climactic act of the conspiracy.
Wow. I've heard some furries.
I'm aware of this interest as is reflected. I was talking about how it's been reflected on many of the different artwork websites.
I haven't seen that.
An actual name for this interest.
Is that Vor?
Called Vor, yes.
Yeah, because I thought with Vor it was just eating the people, not like parts of their body, like the penis.
Yeah, I mean, that has to do part of it with part of it.
Just extreme, not just the biting portion, but going to the extreme of actually removing flesh.
It's under many of those different interests that cannot actually be played out.
Yeah, because when a lot of the extreme Vor that I've seen, they like swallow them whole and stuff like that, but I never thought of the whole thing of just eating someone's penis. Good God.
The mother told the court that her adopted son was a quiet boy who never lost his temper and did well at his temping job at an education training center where she also works. The father said, "We have no doubt that Christopher did not intend to go to this extreme. There is no one in our closest circle of friends who is not shocked at what had happened." Scarns and Monks both deny conspiracy to murder the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why I didn't read this ahead of time, and that is, this is what whet my curiosity on this story, I guess. It's the cutesy ways that Daily Rotten does this stuff of online biting in for the cockbiting. Buddy in for the cockbiting. It's a little weird how they put that, so I had to, they changed the way the stories are put on here, surprise colonoscopy pays off is a weird story, but didn't make on that. Like I said, I'm not finding any.
This has not been a good year for the community.
No, that's why I brought you in here. It's like, it's... It's getting to the point where I'm going to see Dateline NBC doing their, to catch a furry.
You know they're going to do it sometime soon. I mean, if once you see it on CSI, it's not too far behind.
Hmm.
Well, no, because I remember them doing the straight version of Convergence on CSI. They hadn't come after us yet.
And they also did the adult baby one.
Yeah, I remember seeing that one.
Yeah, so, the phone's ringing, so what?
Okay.
It's almost as if the show just got into the habit of writing about different fetish interests.
That's all they can think of so far.
Yeah, it did seem that way.
Well, Las Vegas, you know.
It did seem that way.
Just wait till they move to Los Angeles next.
Chris, Jimmy wanted me to tell you, I tried to call in earlier, let you know when you were talking about that, Pee Wee Herman and his arrest. His defense actually was that he was not masturbating. He was in there to review the movie, and he was just giving it 200 thumbs up.
Didn't he use both hands?
Chris has gone speechless.
According to the report, it was his left hand only.
Oh. He must be right handed.
Okay, so it was 150.
Yep. Okay.
Gotta love it.
That was a dead air maker.
Right? Yeah. Well, the problem, I'm not finding that many stories here to go to like we normally would. And so it's, we actually have, you know, this whole thing of, I don't know what that, where we're going next.
It's amazing.
And that, so it's.
As Chris hunts for more.
Like I said, I'm trying to figure there.
Just make something up.
This is not Fox News.
Well, we were talking about foxes.
I have been watching a lot more MSNBC lately. I love Rachel Maddow. And she, every so often she ends the show by talking about going home to her girlfriend. So I think
really
that's
now?
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Openly, well, she's probably now just starting to talk about that because she finally got a television. She never had a television at home.
You're kidding.
No. It's one thing she's always commented on. I don't have a TV. She doesn't have a TV.
What does she do?
Television personality.
She's an Oxford. She's got a doctorate from Oxford.
Yeah,
I'm sure she could find
television.
Mensa puzzles? I don't know.
She's a sharp cookie, and she's funny.
Mensa puzzles?
Uh-huh. She's funny. Mensa, that organization for really smart people?
Oh, yes.
If you don't know, then you don't belong.
I don't want to know, probably.
Stanley's a Mensa.
Right now.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
My other half is a Mensa, so.
Are you sure it's not a mensch?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be the word I would use.
I've had several friends who are Mensas, and while they are very, very smart, so many of them are socially...
inept?
Yes.
Okay, please, let me finish that sentence for you.
In that case, what you need to do is watch the Rick and Steve episode that they're in part of Get Gaysa.
Gaysa?
Yeah. There's it's on Logo. It's a...
It's a kind of a...
Lego version.
Oh, yeah.
Lego stop action.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Of a very smart... One kid's very smart, and the other one's kind of butch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, it's, you know, the kind of smart twink grown up and the ex-jock.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one where they go for counseling because the jock wants to have a three-way. And so it drags them off to marriage counseling. And so they end up going what their other interests are. So they go to this gay Mensa group. And everyone, because he's acting so stupid, they actually think he's smart.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I did see that.
And then later on, they go to a monster truck rally.
Mm-hmm. Which ends in disaster.
Not really.
Pretty much.
It ended with a couple of sessions of Oh Piggy, Oh Piggy.
Yeah.
You have to watch.
I really don't want to know.
No, well, it's worth watching on Loco.
The scarier part is that it's a term of affection used during the sexual act. The scary part is when you watch another episode of it and the one character's parents are visiting. And
oh, yes.
You can hear them in the other room and she's going, Oh, piggy, oh, piggy.
have to check this out.
It's Logo, channel 160 on Comcast.
I don't know what it is on AT&T. I just push the button.
Okay.
We have that?
I do. You don't.
It's digital cable.
Fine.
That's extra.
You don't have any channels above 100.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Here we go. Let's see here. They've, you know, I've seen a lot of. We talked about the gay sailor who was killed in out in San Diego.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've got a little problem with the coverage, the way it's been set. It just, for some reason, to me, it sounds like they're going for a cheap joke.
What do you mean?
Well, when they announced...
Wasn't another sailor arrested?
Yes. The problem I have with it is the term they're using to identify that it was a sailor who was killed.
Yes.
It just seems to me that every time I keep seeing these news things on Yahoo or the things, and they keep saying, murder charge file in gay seaman's death. It feels to me like they're going for a crude joke.
Because they say seaman rather than sailor?
Yeah. Mm. I know it's considered interchangeable, but I just, every time I've seen that, whether it's Drudge Report or Yahoo or AOL, and mm-hmm. they use that term, and it's like, to me, it's like they're doing it to make it a little more inflammatory.
Hmm.
There's another story on that that's been big here in Houston that has a similar thing to me, but the way they say it, it makes it sound...
Nasty?
Nasty. It's the story of the doctor who was basically running around with a lot of young kids, molesting and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they had to emphasize the fact that this doctor was... He was picking up boys.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were prepubescent.
Okay.
And so it's one of those things that I've noticed a lot with especially with online predators and the predators they have. They show you the thing on there. If they don't tell you the sex of the child, it's probably a female. That it was a male perpetrator and a female victim.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll keep everything neutral and say, you know, it was child, you know, child molested, you know, endangered a child, did this to a child, da 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 da. But if it's a male predator and it's male victims,
mm-hmm.
they immediately have to tell you it was boys. It seems to me that there's that, you know.
On the other hand, they may be saying boys because if they just say child, you will assume it's a girl.
But if they would say child for everything, then who cares what the gender of the...
Because it's... yeah, because a pedophile is a pedophile.
Yeah, and from experience of people
they will use the term gay pedophile rather than... And never use the term straight pedophile.
Yeah.
But
a pedophile is neither... gay or straight. A pedophile is someone who is only attracted to children.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I've seen with this doctor that they made mention of the fact that, yeah, he was married and all that, but we got to mention the fact he was diddling boys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I've seen that double standard for too long on here, and it's something I've questioned.
It's the connotation that they're trying to,
We need to make this sound like, we need to sound this person sound even more evil, so let's show the fact that he was screwing little boys,
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, just children. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the act itself, no matter who it's the gender of the child is, shouldn't be a factor in the story. You know, the fact that he did this, you know, is accused of these things for so many kids for over so many years and all that. That's the story.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the victim was boy, girl, hamster, or that doesn't figure into it. It shouldn't figure
it out.
It shouldn't, but this is Texas, and...
It wasn't that many years ago that
just coming out of the closet as gay, people assumed that you wanted to have sex with children.
Yeah. Or like the when they did the raids on the adult bookstore,
mm-hmm.
and went out and on everyone in the newscast and that put out the names of who was arrested and who they worked for and where
yeah.
they lived. It's like
the old bar raids of old.
Yeah, it's like who? Where's that relevant? I mean, kind of goes back to the, you know, we talk about the anniversary of Pee Wee Herman
mm-hmm.
stroking it in an adult bookstore.
It's such a non-news item, but you're right. In days of old, when a gay bar was raided, your name, address, and where you worked were published in the newspaper. They didn't do that when they raided straight bars. But they did it with gay bars.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's sad to see we still have that double standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially looking at some of the other stuff we've had.
And it's sad that the people who are giving the news put it in that manner.
Yeah. That's part, well, you know, it's sex sells, whether it's cars or whether it's the news.
Yeah.
That's what gets their attention.
And yeah. so that's the thing. Is like, it got my attention, the fact that they keep saying, you know, gay semen's death. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, it's the cutesy way of doing that. Little follow-up with the, speaking of gay bar raids.
Yes.
The one out of Dallas for the...
Fort Worth?
No, Dallas Eagle.
Oh, the Eagle one.
That was raided.
That was raided like the weekend they opened at uh-huh. a new location, which was like next door.
And the problem was the license was not... Basically what happened is the owners of the Eagle went and had used an agent to renew and change over their license.
Yeah.
And the ball got dropped.
Ooh.
So the liquor license was not transferred to the new building.
Oh, brother.
And that's what the raid was about.
But, you know, that could have been avoided. If they were planning this raid, they knew it wasn't.
There is some talk of some suspicion on behalf of the Eagle ownership and managers that what happened was that another rival bar tipped off the TABC
uh-huh.
about this.
Wow.
And that's what led to the reason for the raid. Fortunately, the Eagle reopened within a day or two back at their old location.
Uh-huh.
So, since the liquor license was still valid there, they went back to their old place, reopened there.
I hope they sue that agent.
Well, they didn't go into that part, but the you know, the owners that spoke to the newspaper said, you know, we screwed up. It's not really the TABC cracking down. It was, you know, they got us legitimately.
Hmm.
And it was interesting where I read the story about that.
Where?
It was in a weekly gay newspaper.
Wasn't from Houston.
No, it was the Dallas Voice.
Ah.
The online edition of the Dallas Voice had covered the story and mm-hmm. interviewed the people in there. So, a little bit of good news on that part, that it's
yeah.
not as suspicious as we thought it was going to be.
Okay. But it's still, there's something fishy about it.
Yeah, I don't understand why raid a bar when you can just shut it down when they're not open.
I don't know.
Well, you know, guys have that flair.
You know, I mean,
some police agencies, and it's you know, I read the story from one over in England. They want to be able to justify what they do and how they do it. And
oh.
it looks bigger and flashier doing that stuff. Mm. Over in England, there was a story of a... they got a tip that somebody put on a Facebook ad, a Facebook comment,
mm-hmm.
that they were going to have an all-night party at their house.
Yeah.
Come one, come all. So, the police armed for a riot with a helicopter support, busted in on this backyard barbecue for 15 people because they saw it on Facebook and they were expecting to come in there and find a full-blown rave going on.
Oh, good Lord.
And so they spent £200 on having this helicopter come out to give support and all these officers come out. And, you know, they probably brought, because British police don't carry guns,
no.
They had to bring out the special police that do carry guns.
Oh, Lord.
And all this to raid a backyard barbecue for 15 people.
How embarrassing.
Oh, somebody's going to get caught on the carpet for that one.
You know, well, you got to remember, see, that's Facebook, and I think they were thinking Craigslist. It's Craigslist that has the crazy stuff.
Oh, okay.
You know, where you put up an ad of, hey, you know, I'm moving and I don't want any of the crap in my house. I won the lottery. So come by my house at such and such, such and such, and just come on in and take whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. And when it's not really your house.
When it's not your house. Or, hey, I'm throwing a party at this house and blah, 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 blah. It's like, let's see. One.
What kind of person would go to something like that? You know, hey, come to our backyard. We're having a party, and you don't even know these people.
I've met a couple of them that just want to have that much kind of crazy fun.
Happens at frat parties all the time. What are you talking?
But you kind of know. I mean, you go to the same college,
but you're friends. They're friends on Facebook. Don't you know, with Facebook and you've got 3,000 friends, they're all your close personal buddies?
No.
That's right, you don't do that.
There's an option that says no.
Yeah.
I push that a lot because I don't know who these people are. I don't want to be their friends.
I love that attitude.
You're anti-social.
No, I'm realistic.
No, I agree with Jimmy on this one, because I get people online sending me all kinds of little stuff on Yahoo, and I'm like, I don't know this person.
Exactly.
That's why, you know, I'd be nice, and I accept it till I find out about them, and my Yahoo Messenger list has, you know, always available, and then there's the people who live in Canada and the United States, and then Europe and Asia, and there's one part of there of, don't even think about it. On my MSN messenger, there's always available, could bees, and graveyard. And the only reason why I keep them in there is so that I can block them and not have to get any further crap from them.
Well, right.
So you accept them as a friend, and then you put them down there and go, yeah, I don't want this.
No. And I don't care how many friends we have in common. I don't know you.
Jimmy, just think of it as a big online orgy.
But it isn't.
Yes, but see, the way your computer gets screwed over by viruses, that's modern bukkake.
Yeah, boy, I've got one right now, as a matter of fact.
You're as bad as my dad. I know you're the same age, but you got to quit clicking on everything.
I don't click on everything. And besides, I don't think I ever got rid of this virus, because it's the third time it's cropped up. It's the same one.
That's not the first time you've used that phrase either.
I beg your pardon.
Not getting rid of the virus.
Stop!
All right, our final
story. Oh, that was not right.
No way. Our final story, since this is supposed to be our trans night, and we did have one show.
It used to be our trans night.
Yeah, it used to be. Oregon transgendered mayor receives complaints for short skirt.
What?
A group has filed a complaint against the first openly transgendered U.S. mayor, Mayor Stu Rasmussen, for violating the Silverton, Oregon City Council's dress code, reports The Advocate. Silverton Together, a nonprofit community organization, filed the complaint after Rasmussen wore a short skirt and halter top to speak to a group of teenagers. It's surprising, disappointing that an organization chartered to promote diversity and cultural understanding would take a public position of intolerance. Rasmussen said. The group's executive director said her group regularly sends youth home to change into appropriate clothing. I expect our public leaders to follow the same guidelines that we have for our youth. Rasmussen, who identifies as transgender, prefers male pronouns and has called the dress code unnecessarily and explained that he wore the outfit due to the heat. It was hot and sticky. My attire was completely appropriate to the circumstances. And I also received a number of compliments during the day.
He was on Larry King last night. The man is my age. He identifies as a cross-dresser. He is a heterosexual married man.
Okay.
And the mayor of Silverton,
yeah.
Colorado, he was wearing a dress that came below the knee to this interview. And the tape that they had of him in Silverton also showed him in a skirt that was below the knee. So that probably was...
Well, you know, it was a warm, sticky day, and it being an older gentleman of that age, it's apparently maybe...
You've seen my midriff. Should I show it off in public?
Well, what I'm just saying is the fact that what possibly...
I'm so glad you said that and not me.
You know, if he was in a short skirt, there's the possibility that suddenly the mayor was showing... went to a teabagging party.
Oh!
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, this has been After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. Unless you'd like to contact the FCC, then we're dead air.
Yeah.
We will be back next week. We'll have one of our other theater groups here.
Yes, we will.
Sure, we'll be here.
All right.
Talking about food fights.
Oh,
it scares me. They're going to have a food fight, and they usually have a corn dog in there, so someone's going to lose an eye.
Or get cornhole.
It's time for your PSAs. Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Hi, I'm David Dye, host of The World Cafe. Here at The Cafe, musicians, both new and old, reveal what inspire them. From groups getting ready to release their debut to veterans of the music industry, hear what it's like to chase the dream of being in a band. And hear a great mix of music. I put it together every day. Like Carl Newman of The New Pornographers told us,
I still approach everything from like a fanboy point of view.
Join us, a community of music fans, on The World Cafe.
Tune in to The World Cafe starting Wednesday, July 22nd from noon to 1 p.m. right here on KPFT, Houston.
When it goes on the attack, the swine flu virus can't distinguish between a person who has health insurance and a person who is uninsured. So perhaps it's germane to talk about an...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT, Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.